shot.
I know.
Rick said you picked it. Any more chairs?
All right, Richard, you can start whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. So we'll call the meeting to order. This is a regular meeting of the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission on Wednesday, March 16th, 2021. If you can, please stand and join me in the pledge of allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen.
Wow, that sounded awesome.
Danielle, roll call, please.
Larry?
Here.
Ken?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Here.
Richard?
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
Yes. I would like to add action item H, the wastewater treatment plant.
I would just ask a notice question on an action item. Are we going to be within the notice requirements to add this today and take an action on it?
No. I don't know what the action is. Kind of late in the game to add. We don't know what the issue is.
It'll be a request.
Well, the only reason I'm questioning that is because without notice, we can't take action. So we could put it as an information item and then take action on it. Probably warrant it as a special meeting.
Okay.
That's the notice. So we'll put it as E on information item. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Any other additional corrections?
No.
Okay. No. All right. Does anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
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 Okay. Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda as written.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as written.
Same.
And the addition of the wastewater treatment plant information item.
Second. All right, so we have a motion by Sharon and a second by Larry to approve the agenda with the addition of information item E, the wastewater treatment plant. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to the approval of the meeting minutes from the regular meeting on Wednesday, February 16th, and the workshop commissioners meeting on Tuesday, February 24th.
Any
additions or corrections to the minutes?
No.
No. Anybody want to make a motion?
Motion to accept as written. Motion to accept as written.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to approve these 2 minute items as written. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. All right, that brings us to public comments. We will take them in the order we've received them. I would ask you to step to the podium and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Danielle will be the timekeeper, and if she starts waving at you, you're getting near the end, okay? So we will begin with Mike Murphy.
Thank you. Everybody can hear me?
I'll come up to the agenda. Try and get you on the microphone if we can.
Okay, excuse the gentleman. Name. Thank you. Thank you, commissioners. I'm here to speak on behalf of action item E. Gary has proposed a rate hike of 4.5%. History will show that the port has been raising the rent yearly at 1.7%. With your permission, I'd like some clarification and ask Gary where he came up with this thought of 4.5%.
we'll cover that when we get to the discussion. That's part of our discussion on port fee rates.
Okay, very good. Looking forward to hearing that. The other thing is that I have to say this is poor timing, commissioners. We're in the middle of a recession. It's not going to get any larger. A bag of grocery costs $100. Gas is going up over $6. I mean, and there's no stop for the years to come. I would like to offer Gary and the commissioners an option 5 to this, and please consider this option. If the port wants to take that lazy quarter instead of that busy dime and go for the full 4.5%, get the 4.5%, but Gary, but don't touch the rates for another 3.5 years. If you need the money up front, it's only fair for us to rent the slips to have a compromise. That's my proposal for option 5, and I wish you guys would give it some consideration because, once again, it's poor timing. You're going to raise the rate, and this year you're going to beautify this place with a waste treatment plant. And I just think the port is headed in the wrong direction. And I just found out your emails are in on the port site, and so if I need to further, or if anyone needs to further talk about a subject, they can address you guys personally with your emails. That's about all I have to say, and I'm going to look forward to seeing why Gary's thinking about raising it 4.5%. So please hear. I mean, this is wrong timing, guys. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Dave King.
Thank you, commissioners. Three big things, and I can get them done pretty quick. They're on the lighter side, I think. I'm president of the Oregon South Coast Fishermen, and I'm here representing some of our constituents, some of our club members that have come to me over these three items. One, you notice there might be some sea lions around here. Well, there's one particular dock, J8, Steve and Sue Mathis, and they'd like to put their boat in soon, like very soon, but unfortunately it's has quite a few visitors. So I don't know if the port can help on that issue or give Steve and Sue some ways to maybe help in that area getting rid of sea lions. I know the Mannequin seems to be working on the Coast Guard dock, but sometimes maybe we can get a bunch of mannequins or
something. Well, they were up there with Mannequin last night.
Okay, so no Mannequin. All right, but that's Steve's concern. He just voiced that to me this morning. He couldn't get here to talk about that, but he would like to put his boat in. He's a little nervous. The herring, I've had some of our club members come to me. They were fishing on the docks. They might have walked by a sign that says no fishing. I think there's a sign or two on the docks there. But then some of them did go into their boats. You know, they pay money for a slip, and so they were fishing out of their boats. And then I think some of them were also asked to leave, and they couldn't fish out of their boat that was tied to the dock. That's what two did tell me that happened. So I'm curious if that is a policy that Board of Commissioners, that you cannot fish out of your boat. I mean, how often do herring come into our harbor like this? So, I mean, I guess they could untie their ropes and float, and it'd be like just the other boats that are out there fishing. But that came to me from two people that said they were asked to leave. The third thing involves the crab dock, the one that's down on the water that I guess has been voted to be removed. I've had numerous people come to me saying they really enjoy using that crab dock, especially when they can't get around that well, some of them, and when they bring their families, their kids. I know it's an issue. I think some people have had their props, crab rope around their props. I know that can be a problem, especially if it's braided line and takes out your outdrive. But I hope that maybe some more dialogue and some maybe reconsideration, looking into it further down the road to see if maybe it can remain in place. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. Patrick Kennison.
Thank you, commissioners. I haven't lived here that long. Not near as long as that dock has been there, but I've used that dock ever since I got here. I'm referring to what they call a crab dock. I don't walk so good anymore, so after you threw the lady out and put the dikes in, it made my walk a lot longer, but at least I have the dock to fish off of. And I really enjoy it, and I think whenever you voted to remove it, somebody on the board called it a navigational hazard. Who is that? Okay. Did you go to the Coast Guard and get verification that it's a navigation? I've been down there when the Coast Guards come in with great big fishing boats that no longer work. They've towed them in and they've turned around all around, not come close to that dock. Is there any record of how many accidents that have happened with that dock since it's a navigational hazard?
Do you have documentation on complaints from the dock?
I can name three boats that have had crab pots wound up in their props from it, and also the access to the jetty. You know, it's one of the reasons we cut it off because cars have drove off the end of it, and we've had to pull them back up off.
Why? Didn't you just push them a little bit farther and get rid of them?
Go ahead.
I'm sure most people. So is that all? Is just some complaints?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm sure you'll get a lot more from people complaining like myself if you take it out. And I didn't see any signs or any indication that you were putting it up before the board to remove it. Where did you advertise?
Public meeting.
There's no, why wouldn't there a sign put
we
down?
We don't post public meetings at our docks. It's located on our website. And the newspaper, every single meeting and their topic and the agenda. So.
Yeah, because I found out about it just word of mouth. I didn't see any public notification that it was even up for vote to remove it. So
we post all of our meetings, and they're always welcome for you guys to come and put your input in.
You still didn't public.
They are publicly noticed by the state laws of Oregon for public meetings.
Well, I think it ought to be expanded. If you're going to do something in that regard, it ought to be expanded to the public that is actually using the facilities. A sign down there would have been said, if you want comment, please contact or come to the board meeting. We're considering removing this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Ann Frazier.
Thank you. In regards to the marine surveys, it's in the packet for mortgage. A couple questions or comments. One, I know that Commissioner Spear is aware of it, but are you, any of the rest of the board, aware that marine surveyors are not credentialed by any one agency in the United States? There is none that credentials unless you have a minimum of 5 years experience, and then you can be accredited by the National Marine Association or National Association of Marine Surveyors, NAMS, or the Society of Accredited Marine Surveyors, which is SAMS. Mr. Davis, our former commissioner on this president, on this panel, was not either one, and he had much more experience. At the final comment on Mr. Davis's survey that he did on my fishing vessel in 2018, states, this survey is issued to the condition that we and the individual surveyor under no circumstances held to responsible for any error, omissions, default, negligence, misrepresentations, or misstatements in this report. It constitutes only a statement of our opinion based on the conditions we found and is not a warranty to the conditions of the vessel or its hull or machinery. So to require or to think that a survey will stop your derelict boat problem, abandonment in the harbor, is false. I don't care what Washington may be doing, but the survey will never fly because surveyors are not responsible. Just as is the guy that does the inspection on your home upon selling or buying your home. So the additional cost for a vessel, and your policy doesn't say if it's annually when I renew my mortgage, that I have to have a survey that's less than a year old. And mind you, there's only one current surveyor between San Francisco and Newport that I'm aware of, and that is Brian Skellerud out of Charleston, and he's booked up, and it's good luck in finding time to get one from him. So the idea of a marine survey currently I find it's a farce to try to alleviate your derelict boat program. I suggest that upon approval of your rates that you strike that from your request and find a better method. I agree that derelict boat problem is an issue, and the legislature needs to address it with some teeth. But the request and a survey, quite honestly, as any commercial fisherman will tell you in this room, the only reasons we need them is one for insurance and two for financing if we buy a boat. Beyond that, they're as useful as toilet paper. Thank you.
Okay. Burton Groves.
Yeah, what I wanted to bring up that it's my understanding that the port plans on removing the dock by the small jetty, that it's hazardous. Well, that dock's been there for over 25 years. There was one there before then, but it was replaced with a new dock and a new ramp. And I don't know if it was that dangerous that you think 25 years ago would have been brought up. I think the danger lies in the fact that if you remove that dock, people, and they're doing it now, including myself, will go down on the rocks to fish. And I've fell on those rocks, and so I have seen other people fall on them. And I haven't seen any real serious injury, but that doesn't mean that it won't happen. As far as it being a hazard, I've seen boats coming in there all the time. And they got plenty of room to go through there and to come out. No problem at all. I've seen the Coast Guard boat come on in, towing another boat. They had no problem. In fact, they went all the way into the bay. In fact, I towed a boat in. They were behind me. And they turned around where they launched the boats, that big Coast Guard boat. So I don't think that boat dock is a hazard to anyone. I think it's depriving the local people of the opportunity to go down there and fish off the dock where it's fairly safe. Whereas if it's not there, the water will end up going on the rocks. That's one issue. Another issue I'd like to bring up is the timing of the meeting here. A lot of people work for a living. They're not at this meeting because they're working. And another thing, I voiced my opinion, I think it was last week when I went to the office and verbally told them how I felt. And I talked to a lot of people about this meeting, and they felt that they're wasting their time being coming. You're going to do what you want. I don't feel that way. I think that you people are understanding that you at least listen to the people out here and what we have to say, then you'll consider it. The walkway now down there now, there's a lot of people, elderly people. I'm pretty good shape. I'm 79. I can run down there. But there's a lot of people can't at my age and older. And they're carrying these heavy crab pots, and that's a long ways to walk for people well into their 80s. And I've seen them down there. And why they cordon off that road, I don't know. I've only seen one accident down there in 25 years, and the guy went off the side, the front, and somebody came and towed him away. But that's the only accident I've seen. I haven't seen any boaters complain about that dock being down there. No one. I think that's about it. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jerry Klein.
Should I do mine or Bill Manning's?
I'll start with you and then I'll switch you over to Bill Manning.
Bill's is shorter. So I got a couple of things I want to just say, and then I have a couple of questions. A raise in the mooring fees. How do we support, I'm not saying commercial, I'm not saying the users of the port, how do we support a raise in the slip fees when the docks are in such sad shape? Second, yes, Charleston is more expensive, but the docks are in way better condition by being maintained. They have salmon season all year. We don't. We don't have anybody working for a salmon season for us. Not that I see. I mean, I get the reports from ODF&W daily, and Dan was showing us our options, which are next to nothing. You know, then we got to go to Charleston to fish and pay slip fees there, as well as we're paying slip fees here. So, next I have a couple questions. I would like to know, how much does the commercial fleet bring in revenue? Second question, I would like to know how much the sport fleet brings in revenue. And then I would like to know those two answers. Old timers told me around here that the commercial boats paid for the sport basin. I got one more. Can you hear that piece of? That's the last one. And then somebody very, very smart, not looking at her, showed me the marina. Well, it shows me the beachfront RV park in January grossed $117,000. Expenses were $12,269. The commercial retail was $45,288. Expenses $10,163. The fuel dock lost money. I don't know how that could happen. And then it says an Astra, and it says the marina, $79,000, expenses $95,979. Okay? Then it says in Astra, marina includes administrative costs. What are the administrative costs? Question.
And that's what report coming up next.
Well, I mean, just a simple question. What are they? The costs?
Well,
does pay come out of that, or?
You want to try and explain everything that's in administrative costs and why it's in this particular spot? Okay, and then we're at 3 minutes, so go ahead, Gary.
Administrative costs includes payroll, utilities, food, marina. It's all together, but it's in our packet. So if you want to look at the packet.
Oh, I've looked at it.
Well,
that's false.
Well, it's not false. Those are the numbers. I don't know.
We're not losing money there, man. Your pay's coming out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, give us a break, dude. Seriously.
Do you have a question for Bill Manning?
I do. Bill Manning had a doctor's appointment in Medford. He thought the meeting was at 6 o'clock, and then I told him it was at 2 o'clock. He wasn't really happy about that. He asked me to ask, if we can afford new pickups, why do we need to raise the rates on mooring? Bill Manning asked me that question. So you can answer that for Bill.
Okay, thank you. Lloyd Whalen.
I'm going behind you. I don't want to fall and talk to you. It's okay. Well, I don't envy you guys. I sat there 20 years. The thank yous are very far in between. In fact, I got more thank yous for 2 years in the service than I did 20 years here. So, but the survey that Gary requests here, I don't think he knows what he's talking about. I get a regular survey every 2 years, and I get a haul-out survey every 6 years. And that's required. And and things like a life raft, I always did them every 2 years, no matter what happened. And now it's recommended by the government to be done every year. So, and to me, the second time's a waste of time. I mean, doing it that quick. And as far as the mortgage, I think it's a very bad time to start trying to jack us up on mortgage. It's Just my fuel operation is going from 17% to 34% from last year. And we don't know if we're going to have the processing like we did last year, because nobody worked last year, so why the hell should it work this year? And that's about the way it's working for trying to deliver product. And another thing, we are talking about higher mortgages in other ports, there's a lot of reason. Like if you go to Coos Bay, you got 5-6 processors there. You have live grab buyers, you have everything. It's a lot different what we got here. And when this, I understand the fuel dock cost down here, because I was sitting on this bill when we put it in. And I said, the thing I said during that meeting is, if we put in a fuel dock, we need a surge suppressor so bad, because nothing's going to hold up. And that's exactly what happened. The surge, things all broke loose, and there goes your fuel lines, and there goes your cost. And this is the same thing as just being in this port. If you can afford all the bumpers, if you got any weight in the boat, you got to keep buying them every week, because it won't take the surge. So, like I say, I don't mind seeing a, I guess you're not charging separate electricity. I haven't seen the bill lately. But I don't mind a 1% or 2% increase to cover that. And like I say, I can't see new pickups sitting over here at the shop. So thank you.
Terry Bernard.
Good afternoon. My name is Terry Bernard. I'm here in behalf of saving our crab docks. I also believe that the closing of the road to the crab docks is a direct violation of the American Disabilities Act of 1990, letting people with disabilities have equal access to people without disabilities. I also believe that it would be a concern for first responders to respond to someone in need out there due to the fact that the road is blocked and fire, sheriff, ambulance would not be able to access someone in need at the time with the road blocked in place. So I basically would like to see the road back open. I'd like to see that dock stay in place. There's no other place that you can crab with a crab cage without getting it hung up on the rocks, like over here at the Coast Guard station. The only place to use a crab cage and crab pots, the closest place would be, I guess, Crescent City or Gold Beach. So that's basically the only place that we can use crab cages and crab pots without losing them and getting them hung up on the rocks. And I'd like to see that dock stay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further that you know of, any public comment?
Not as far as I know.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your comments, for being here. Let's move to the manager report.
In January, court staff, or office staff reviewed this, but in February, it was maintenance staff that was reviewed on the stormwater pollution control plan and the spill prevention control and countermeasure plan. Port maintenance also received counterbalance forklift operator training by United Academy, which is powered by United Rental. The Mountain View Motorcycle Barber Tattoo Parlor had a broken water line. 5R Excavation came out and found and fixed the broken line. Port staff did come across someone dumpster diving in the maintenance shop dumpster. He was asked to leave. The Curry County Sheriff's had to come down to the public fishing pier because there was an altercation between three individuals. All three of them were trespassed. Port staff was cleaning the RV park restroom on the men's side when it came across what it looked to be a fire that had started. It was properly cleaned up and the stain was removed. There was a vehicle that was tagged seven times. And it was towed from port property. South Coast Night Security came across someone that had illegally dumped in the commercial basin parking lot. Our security footage caught the person, found out that they were a deckhand from a boat in the boatyard. So they have been found and labor and cleanup charges have been applied. And an RV park guest hit an electrical pedestal while they were pulling out of their site. The site was shut down and the pedestal is still waiting to be replaced. South Coast Night Security and the port recorded 76 security issues. And in the month of February, monthly inspections were completed, but no stormwater discharge occurred during that month. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any questions for Dan? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to the financial report, Gary.
All right, for the month of February, the end of the month, unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $537,385. Restricted cash and equivalents totaled $899,493, with a total asset cash at $1,512,345. The profit and loss for February, all funds were $342,877. Total expense was $394,757, with a net income of -$51,880. To the question about the marina, including administrative costs, so I just wrote down a few things looking in our package here. It includes debt payments, payroll, utilities, the boatyard costs, the port office costs, security costs. So many of those things are in there. It just adds up. There's a lot of administrative costs that makes that number very high. The unusual expenses, we did buy two Ford trucks that was approved months ago from the board. It took 6 months to get the trucks. We did spend $30,000 putting a fire hydrant in for the commercial basin. That's when we have fires on a boat that they access a fire hydrant. That's not a quarter mile away. We did put, pay for 20 new security cameras. That's $7,500. And then we did repair a sidewalk. It was $1,800. And we bought some more block stamps to build a dumpster enclosure by Zola's. Budget-wise, we're still on track on the budget. Any questions?
I have one for you, Gary. So going back to the marina, so all the the loans and the administrative costs and everything comes out of this one area, the marina, for everything, right?
Yep.
Okay.
I think you need to be clear about that. So administrative costs are going to be housed in one of the four areas of the budget, correct?
That's correct.
So for budgeting purposes, the administrative costs are lumped in with the marina. You could just easily put them in the RV park or anywhere else, right?
Yeah.
So that's more of a matter of the way the budget is arranged than tying the administrative costs to the marina. You can separate out the marina charges from the administrative costs, so you can tell profit and loss on that side as well.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not a matter of saying, well, this is what the marina is making and losing. It's a matter of where in the budget you want to put it, as I understand it.
That's correct.
Okay.
So is there a reason why we don't have administration costs separate?
We used to. It just depends on the board. If the board wants to separate it, you let me know. But it's been running this way for the last 5 or 6 years. It all depends on how you want to see the profit or loss, how things are separated in the budget.
Well, I mean, at one point we had administrative costs separated out by cost and expenditure units. So you would have to account for all the costs in each one of those areas.
Right.
So the understanding was, that got to be more of a bookkeeping nightmare than anything, trying to, Travis runs out and goes to the RV park to fix a pedestal, so he's charging 30 minutes of his time to the RV park, or an hour, and then, he runs down to do the fuel dock, so then he's got to charge time to the fuel dock. So it became much more, from an accounting perspective, it became much more expeditious to say, let's lump all the administrative costs under one category and put them in one place,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't have to do that. I suppose we could have a separate accounting accounting category, if you will, for district administrative costs.
Right. But when we look at this, and it says marina, I mean, when we look at the beachfront RV, it says, okay, this is what we did in revenue, and this is what we did in expenses, but we'll never know on paper what the marina actually did.
Yeah, we do.
Well, we don't see that here.
No, it's not the way it's displayed here, you don't know. But I mean, if we said, okay, so what were the costs for the commercial basin versus the income for the commercial basin, that can be determined. It's just not readily displayed here.
Oh.
If the board wants to see that, we can produce those numbers for you. It's just a matter of separating those numbers. But
well, we're about to start another budget cycle. So yeah. We have a budget advisory committee that we're going to appoint later today, and that's right. A discussion we can have if we want to, because I would like to talk to Kim and to our accountant and say, okay, so what's the pros and cons of saying we're going to make a completely separate administrative site versus the way we're doing it. If it's a benefit or it's a wash, we can do that. If there's a reason that becomes an accounting problem, then I'd like to know that too. So
I understand what you're saying, but then when it comes to us voting on these rates today, we really don't know today, looking at these figures, where we actually are in the marina. Right?
Well, we can find out. I mean, if we have to, we can figure that out.
Your administration cost is going to be there no matter what. So you break out your administration, it's going to be negative no matter what. But you can see, if you want to see how much money we're spending on docs, like I said, we can separate those numbers. Provide those.
We just want to make sure that we're in the right place for the fees in the marina.
Yeah,
we don't want to.
But you also have overhead costs.
Just do the whole course.
Somebody has to pay the overhead costs as well. I mean, we are subsidizing the RV park and the commercial retail.
Mm-hmm.
And they're helping pay the full gambit as well.
Yes, they are. Okay.
Well, this would be an excellent time to have that discussion as the budget, as we're developing the budget, if we want to try and change that.
Right.
The way it's currently done.
Okay. I just need to know how to vote on that.
Any further questions for Gary about the financial report?
No.
Harbor Master report.
Okay. In the RV park, routine maintenance and checks are done daily. Staff is keeping up on water leaks, mowing, and pedestal issues. They repainted a section of the men's bathroom stall, as Danielle said, that looked like there was a fire that got started inside one of the men's stalls that ruined the floor, so we repainted the floor in there. As you guys know, the RV park construction project is delayed right now, so we opened up all those sites. They are getting rented and filling up, and then we are anticipating a new construction schedule to block out the new dates. Hopefully we get it soon. The occupancy for the month of February was 26%. It's better than what the last 4 years have been. In the marina, staff has worked to remove grass and vegetation in both basins. They cleaned and wiped down pedestals and are going through tightening cleats, piling hoop softeners, and other issues as they find them. Just so everybody knows, we have new 2022 parking passes in the port office. Owners or captains will need to come to the office to get them for any deckhands, and they will need their license plate numbers before they can be issued. Boat launches, we had 195 boat launches. That's five up from January. Those are significant increases in boat launches from the past 4 years. We did two telehandler jobs, six haulouts, and staff went to the commercial public hoist, they greased and tightened the brake. It's fully operational in good condition. And then as far as the Hallmark dock goes, Jack's coming out and we're going to perform a load test out there and see how much deflection there may or may not be out there to determine if we need to further fix that dock out there or not. maintenance completed 73 work orders throughout the port. The Hungry Clam did report a water leak inside their kitchen area. We found a small pinhole in one of the copper lines. We made plans with them. They shut down for a day, and staff went in and replaced all the damaged wall coverings and replaced all the plumbing that services the kitchen area.
So, question about the Hallmark dock. If Jack determined that there is unsafe deflection, then our option will be to close it or to do emergency repairs.
Or reduce the
load. Or is it that bad?
I think the option will be is to reduce the load capacity that could possibly be out there. We're going to load it probably with a dump truck and see how much deflection there is from that. The average weight that's out there is usually only a forklift and a total water, you know. So I don't anticipate we're going to have to do much after that, given the loads that there are, but Jack will have to determine what we do after that.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right, hearing none, let's move to the port manager report here.
All right, Jack Aiken did come out to see look at the warehouse with his engineers, and a Hallmark and our boardwalk. He's working on his report to us. He wants to see the warehouse again. He wants to get a second, put his eyes on it again at the warehouse, just get a better feel of what's rotting in the warehouse. We'll probably have a special meeting about the warehouse in a week or two, so amongst other things. FEMA job is progressing. Jack did come out here to do a drone survey of the Basin 2 slopes. He did that to get quantities on the construction drawings. We do have a conference call with FEMA next week. Hopefully, we're going to move forward with getting a final approval, and getting a budget, and then moving on with the FEMA project. Okay. So that's looking positive there. And I just noted that the SBAO conference did happen last month, and they're supposed to have, if anybody missed any meetings they wanted to see, they're going to have it on the website so you can view.
So if we stay on schedule and we're on track with FEMA, then the potential is that the work will begin on the boat basin in October?
Well, maybe. You have to get in water work period permit through Corps of Engineers. And also get a contractor lined up and whatnot. More than likely, what's going to happen is the on-land work's going to happen first. If we get a contractor and it fits their schedule to do the work, we might be able to start in water work this in water work period.
How about dredging?
Dredging is the same thing. So we've got to get the permit and get the equipment. And supply chain, I don't know. Jack did say he checked with the supplier of the dredge. He still thinks it's 6 to 8 weeks out, but as time moves on, that could change. So the faster we get approval on the budget, the faster we can start ordering stuff. Then we really know what the numbers are and dates are.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. That puts us to action items. Action item A, mortgage license agreement review.
Approval.
I'm sorry. I need to catch me every time. So I'd entertain a motion to approve the management report.
I make a motion to approve the management report, safety security report, financial report, harbor master report, port manager report for February 2022.
Second.
That's discussed.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the four management report. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Now we'll go to action item, the mortgage license agreement revision. All right.
All right, so the court legal counsel provided most of the changes to strengthen our mortgage license agreement to help reduce the derelict boats that we may encounter. Some of those recommendations came from him was about the marine survey part of it. Port staff is recommending that we kind of limit to new boats coming in here, not the existing boats, since we already know the conditions of them. But like the new boats that we don't know anything about, we require a marine survey before they come in. And as I have on a list here, most of the boats that me and Travis feel that we have issues with, they range in the 30 to 40 year range, age of boats. So we added that comment in there for boats that are 30 years and older to have a marine survey.
Okay. So as I understand it from the discussions we had with the attorney, is that, I mean, the choice is really this, essentially. If there's a question about the condition of a boat, then it's either up to the staff to look at the boat and try and make a determination as to its seaworthiness or its ability to stay here, or we get a surveyor. And the idea behind the surveyor is you have an independent third party, theoretically unbiased person getting on board that boat, looking at it and giving you their assessment based on whatever training and experience they have as to whether that boat is seaworthy or functional or safe or whatever we're looking for. That's the purpose of having the surveyor. So, and from my personal perspective, I much prefer that than to saying, well, you know, go ahead, Gary, just go down and tell me if you think that boat on us is seaworthy. I don't feel comfortable about that. I think it needs to be an independent, new eyes look to say what they look like. And the rationale for all of this is because we're trying to limit our exposure and liability to catastrophic loss that our insurance company won't pay for. And having looked at boat sinkings of large vessels in other ports, it can be an expensive operation in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to not only do the environmental cleanup, but just to float the darn thing and get it back out of there. So, I agree with the comments made. The state of Oregon isn't out there giving us a lot of help. Any port's trying to give us any help on this stuff. So the best we can do is to try and find reasonable accommodations for both the boat owners and the port to say, look, we're doing our best here to try and figure out how we can protect the port effort. That's the essential elements behind all of that. Comments, questions?
Comments. Okay, so we already have in our mortgage license agreement, number 9, condition of a vessel. So we already have this so that if the boat isn't operationable or seaworthy to be able to leave on its own, we have the right to board that boat and they would be asked to leave, right?
Yes.
Right. Then we have ordinance number 1, 4.10, that it says if a vessel is removed from the port facility because it is determined by the port to be unseaworthy or inoperable, then at your discretion or your determination, you can request a marine survey or inspection at the cost of that person. So we already have these in place. We just need to enforce them rather than make new rules.
Right. But the agreement, this is a recommendation from our lawyer to strengthen our agreement. So he's saying the agreement would need to be improved. So just because it's an ordinance, you need an agreement as well.
But once again, the thing that I think is important for us to consider is if there are decisions made about this, I would like the rules clear for everybody at the beginning. And I really want to avoid kind of an arbitrary and capricious judgment on the part of the port employee to say, you know what, I just think your boat ought to go. I just don't think that's supposed to be worth it. So I think we're kind of looking for a way to, to make this a little more even-handed. And look at, like I said, an independent, fresh-eyed look at this as warranted. It's essentially the same thing. It's just, to me, it's just a question of who's going to do it.
But you take a vote, and you know, a vote can be bad from day one. So, have issues. So, whether a vote is 30 years old or 1 year old, there's going to be a discrepancy because you're 30 years old. You're going to have to go and have a survey done on your boat to be able to be here, even though you take care of your boat and it's right. Don't you feel like you're being discriminated?
I don't think that's what this says. I think that's a survey of, the age of all the boats that are here. And the way I understand this, the boats of concern that you've seen, that you've kind of noted, fall within that range. It's not because of their age. It's just that that's the range of age in which boats of concern are in this port.
Right.
But that's what it says right here. 30 years or older to provide a copy of a marine survey. It doesn't say.
It does say that.
If you have a concern.
In any new boats come in here that we've never seen before, we're not talking about boats are already here that are renewing their moorage.
Well, we did look at the ones that are here.
We are looking at those.
70%. Anyway, I just...
We're not ignoring the ones that are here.
So, Gary, after a survey is completed, assuming that's what we do, on boats, new boats to the port, will there be another survey required at a period, a certain period of time, five years, 10 years?
Not required, but we'll use our ordinance, and if we strengthen our moorage agreement, to allow us to be able to ask for that in the event that we feel it's needed.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any more discussion?
Yes. On here, it also says you're recommending no liveaboards in the future.
Yeah. I'm recommending to remove liveaboards.
What is the reason for that, please?
There's multiple reasons for that.
I
do have some pros and cons. I didn't bring my pros and cons with me. I would prefer that if the board wants to continue with liveaboards, that we have our lawyer look into the residential laws, because they are considered the residents here, which come with a big package of laws that we got to abide by. But now we're a landlord. So I don't think we really understood all that before, that we had these liveaboard rules before. It used to be a privilege. If they stopped paying, you have the eviction laws. So there's a lot of things that laws have changed in the past, you know, from the past, where you can just remove them without any consequence. But now there is consequence if we try to remove people living on a boat. But I'm not talking about commercial fishermen. You know, staying on their boat for commercial fishing. This is technically liveaboards.
Right. And I agree with you. Laws have really changed a lot. And I myself don't want to see liveaboards go away even in the future. But maybe it would be right to work with the attorney and come up with some guidelines and rules.
We've essentially run into the same problem years ago in the RV park. Before, stays were limited and people wanted to, you know, rent on the back line, the back row there, and put in a park model or something. Mm-hmm. So you change, I mean, you change the status of the port from renting space to accommodating housing. That's a much different standard,
right,
legally, and what we're able to do. Okay, so I think that's the question about liveaboards is, what's the bottom line consequences for the port if the liveaboard person stops paying rent? Or if during COVID the government says people who are paying rent right now can forego rent for an indefinite period of time until the COVID thing's over. So all I'm saying is you cross the line from being a landlord of retail space, which is governed differently than residential space. So I think that's the consequence we're talking about here. And I see a significant, at least in my mind, a significant need to have people on boats that period of time. I mean, if you have a commercial fishing operation here, and I know from talking to other folks that not everybody who works on commercial boats lives in that town, You know, there are folks coming and going to find crew members. Those folks need a place to be. And it's logical they would be on the boat, but that would be on a seasonal basis as opposed to a permanent basis. So I think we're going to have to straddle this and figure out from based on the attorney's best advice, what can we do to be the most reasonably positioned to be able to deal with what might happen, I guess. The other thing I've looked at liveaboard boats. I haven't paid much attention to them, but I can't believe the people who live on a boat don't wash dishes. I can't believe they don't wash their hands, but I've never seen a liveaboard boat go over and get pumped out.
Well, they do.
Well, I've never seen one. So they may or may not, but the other thing that, you know, we're constantly dealing with here are discharge permits and water quality issues in the port. So I'm not saying liveaboards are a problem, but if they are discharging overboard, then that's a problem as well.
Commercial boats do the same thing.
Question.
Could I say a pro on this?
Sure.
We have a liveaboard by our boat at Logan the Welder, and he walks his dog every night about 9 o'clock. And he has a cell phone on him. And he will call 911 if he sees a crime being, you know what I mean? It's kind of a little bit of a watchdog. He takes really good care of his boat. I don't think there's like 10 liveaboards?
Less than that.
And he also goes over and pumps out once a week.
How many do we have?
Does he?
Yeah.
4 or 5. How many do we have? How many liveaboards are currently in the harbor? 4 or 5.
It's a good security measure.
4 or 5.
Okay. I've got personally no problem with them being on the boat. I've had them call me at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, tell me there was someone on my boat. Well, why is the diesel smell here real bad? Mm-hmm. So,
well, and
I'm totally against them being.
We're not renting the boat; we're renting the slip. So, there's got to be a distinction between property and a boat. I mean, we're not renting a house, or an apartment, or a condo. We're just renting a slip, and maybe we do need to get the attorneys to take a better look at and separate it out of here. Well, same thing with an RV. You're renting on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they can declare that a residence, that creates a different issue, in my opinion.
They can declare this vote as a resident, I do believe.
They do. After 28 days, I think it's the same as RVs. They're considered a residence.
It's a physical address, for sure.
Okay. Any more comments?
So if this is passed, it says that you have to have a survey done of a report in the last 12 months. What if you had a survey done 24 months ago for your insurance reasons? Would you honor that, or would you make us get an entirely new survey done within a 12-month marker versus?
If you were a brand new boat here, we would have to discuss it. You would have to probably get a new survey within 12 months. If you're a current boat here, we will not be asking you for it.
How many years is the car as well? Oh, Al, do you have a question?
Yes. Is there a certified surveyor here in town?
No.
How close is a certified surveyor?
Coos
Bay. Is it Portland or?
Coos Bay.
Coos Bay.
Coos Bay.
But he's the only one on the West Coast.
So when you desire to have insurance on your boat, you most of the time you have to have a survey before the insurance would pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
So why the double thing here?
And insurance is every 5 years, at least mine is.
Because a lot can happen if you're a brand new boat here and you come in here and you had one 5 years ago.
Yeah.
A lot happens in 5 years with the boat.
Agreed.
That's why insurance requires you to do it every so often. What we're asking for is one within 12 months. So I know within the last 12 months, you know, and that's given a little bit. There's still 12 months that could, you know, of things that could have happened in between there. That's why when you sell a boat, if the survey does not go with the new owner, if that survey is for you.
Can I counter that? In terms of, you know, if you have a doubt whether a boat is seaworthy or not, you can desire to have that person get a survey. But the mandatory, make it mandatory, I think is completely nonsense, because a survey every year is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is not, you guys are
We're not asking for anybody to do a survey every year. We're not asking for that.
Okay.
I want to make that clear. For a new boat, so it won't apply to anybody in here that has a boat here. It won't apply. But if a new person comes from Grants Pass, from Coos Bay, from anywhere else, and their boat is older than 30 years, what we're asking is for them to provide a current condition survey of that's been conducted in the last 12 months. So we're not every single boat.
Okay. That sounds fair.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a comment? Question?
John?
Yeah.
Only thing I got to say about the survey, in order for us to have insurance on our boat, it's got to be surveyed. Meaning I look at it, it's $14 a foot. Okay, so there goes another $700. All right, so every time we purchase insurance, we have to have a survey within a certain amount of time. But to have somebody that comes down that don't have a survey license say you got to have a survey,
certified.
If you're right.
Kind of
think it's asinine. For insurance purposes, is there a different level of survey for insurance than there is for a general marine survey?
Well, the survey, they do a survey on the boat, and if the boat is not up to par, that survey says that the insurance company, you're not going to get insurance, period. Okay? You're just screwed.
An insurance survey is different.
Yes and no. I mean, there's structural and there's mechanical with it, but to sit here and tell everybody to, hey, get a survey.
I think you lose more customers over it.
Well, I don't understand in and of itself, but you got to pull it out of the water too if you want a proper survey. So that's another $500.
Current condition survey does not require you to pull your boat out of the water.
Okay.
I talked with Brian. I talked with him a lot about how this works. And the survey, a current condition survey, is going through the boat. It's a lot like a Coast Guard safety inspection.
Okay.
They're going to make sure that you don't have open wires, your bilge is clean, and that the structure and the operation and the intended use of the boat is functioning at that capacity. That's what they're doing. They're not sounding your boat. They're not pulling fasteners. It's a current condition survey that gives us the ability to say, yes, it's in a current condition to be able to be used for its intended purpose.
My familiarity with that is that if you're claiming your boat's worth over $30,000, you have to have a proper survey. Under $30,000, they'll take it right on the phone. So it's if you want to
I'm not sure what that means, what you're getting out of it.
No, I'm not. You have to save David Allen. I got my insurance through that guy, and I don't have to have it surveyed by certified survey. Anyway,
in regards to surveys, understand this. Anyone in this room right now could hang the title Marine Surveyor behind you and be credited as far as the national requirements are. It's only once they have 5 years experience does NAMS or SAMS put their name on it, along with the individual paying a due like you would for a union. So any one of us in here right now could be a surveyor. What, Mike?
That's down to how long you're going to be in business for being a survey and making the wrong calls. Anybody can be a surveyor, but you're not going to be a surveyor very long if the boat needs a survey. Surveyors out there, and just so everybody knows, what we're getting at is we're trying to put a line between Travis deciding that your boat isn't seaworthy. I don't think anybody wants me to come up there and make that determination on your boat. So it's what we're trying to figure out is a happy medium between the owner and the port to make a third-party decision and help guide us to what our problems could be with your boat. We have a major issue with boats being left here, and I don't want us to get into the argument between the port and the owner saying, we think it's unseaworthy and you think it is.
Well, then why don't we try something like what some of these other ports in California did? Establish a
boat
10 miles off the beach or whatever, that boat must transit to every year annually in order to maintain, or a new boat for that matter, if that's where your concern is at.
That's another option to go. That's more inconvenience for owners.
Focus on new vessels coming here.
That's right.
I understand.
Okay, and just let me tell you my worst nightmare. My worst nightmare is we allow a boat in here that comes in and catches fire down here at one of these docks and spreads. That, I mean, I don't lay awake at night about thinking about that, but I do worry about that. So I'm concerned that we have a way to look at anybody that shows up new that we don't know. I mean, I think generally the folks in this port have an idea of how boats are maintained, but we don't know anything about guys from out of town.
Sure.
And trust me, we have seen some pretty interesting stuff show up here with transient boats that then wants to become a resident boat. So that's why I'm pretty concerned about having a survey, at least a look with fresh eyes at the boat that's going to show up here and moor next to you. And I can't guarantee you it isn't going to catch fire, but I'd sure like somebody to look at it and say, well, it doesn't look to me like it's going to catch fire.
Okay, but your policy also states it doesn't apply to transient vessels.
Right.
So are we going to say that a guy that then is requiring moorage for a month or more has to have a survey? Or is it just for annual moorage? Because if it's a transit vessel going through, he's got the same conditions that you just responded to. We need to base it on how long a moorage if the guy is requesting a minimum of X amount of time.
Is that in their travel?
I don't think it is for a
No, it's
time.
Not.
I would say probably for anything that's semi-annual or more, semi-annual or annual. You know, monthly boats, they pay a substantially higher rate to be here. They're on the transit dock. You know, you're starting to make it very difficult for transit boats if we're gonna do that. But if you plan on being here for 6 months or more, I think that would be a proper time frame to be able to require that. But if you're only gonna be here for a month or two, let them come and go.
Would it maybe be a better solution just to request pictures and then at your discretion request a survey?
You do
if you're concerned about it?
We do always require a picture of the vessel.
But just write it in there that you can request a survey if you're, you know, if you see a boat where you go, wouldn't I want a survey on that one?
Yeah.
Then you can still maintain your customers. People are still going to want to bring their boat here without saying, well, geez, I got to get a survey to get a slip there.
Well,
and you can still cover yourself. Just request a survey if you see one you don't mind.
The problem we have to be careful with when we implement rules like that is it needs to be fair for everybody. It needs to be a set standard that is across the board for everybody. That's why we went with 30 years. And, you know, it doesn't have to be 30 years. We can take 40 years or 50 years. I mean, that's why we're talking about it. But, you know, 30 years is typically where we start seeing the decline in care and maintenance for boats. And more in particular, it's a lot of recreational boats, but we are finding more and more commercial boats at the 30-year range are starting to deteriorate. So that's why we set the time at 30 years for new boats to let us know how it is within the last 12 months.
Okay. This is going to be gorgeous.
So,
not existing.
Right, a new boat coming in, not somebody
already
here.
Comes in with the boat, and he's going to stay here for the summer. And he's ready to put his boat in the water. Now, where's he going to go get a survey?
Going to have to appoint one. Have to make an appointment to get one. That's the most we can have.
You can get monthly moorage, and if we go with the semi-annual or annual moorage, you can get monthly moorage until it is.
So if you have monthly moorage, you don't have to have it.
That's what I would recommend that we include in it. That only boats coming here, new boats coming here
right.
for a semi-annual or annual moorage, that would apply to.
Because I think that would affect.
I think it would too. I think that, and then if somebody wanted
here,
to decide to show up to our port without calling in advance and they just show up with their boat and they say, I want to put it in the water now, you can still do it. It's going to be at a monthly rate until you comply with all the rules to get your semi-annual rate.
Well, that makes sense because I was going to figure out how you were going to do all that and be able to get a slip off of the kiosk without having a survey after a 30-year-old boat.
Right.
Okay, so to trying to wrap this up, as I understand the discussion right now, we are going to ask for a survey for boats that come to the port that are asking for a semi-annual or annual permit, correct? And we're going to put them on a monthly basis until they get the survey.
If they decide to come here without any pre-advance notice and say that's what they want their boat to go in the water right now, then they'll have to pay the monthly rate until the survey is done. And then after the survey is completed and they meet all the requirements and the things that we need to issue that mortgage, then we can get them started on a better rate for the semi-annual or annual rate.
So is that the way this is currently written?
No.
I think we have to clear up the monthly part.
Okay, so if we make a motion on this, what I'm getting at is that we would have to include in the motion that survey request would be for boats that are seeking a semi-annual or annual permit. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That boat has to be over 30 years old.
Yes.
Right. So if it's not 30 years old, none of this
even
takes place.
Even apply.
30 years old or older, it doesn't even matter.
We'll take two more comments and then we'll take that.
Hey, say you have somebody come in and they go monthly for 6 months. They still haven't had a survey, and they want to keep going on monthly. They're not going to have the survey?
Well, my personal answer would be if you're here 6 months on a month-to-month, then you're gone.
You're out of there.
If you don't get the survey in that amount of time, you're gone. That's okay. Otherwise, you're right. We just keep kicking this can down the road. So
you're kicking the can down the road, and after you pay the monthly rate for 6 months, you probably could have paid for three surveys, but in that amount of time. When you pay the monthly rate, I mean, it is more expensive, and you'll be quickly inclined to probably buy the survey.
Well,
I would imagine.
The concerns I expressed to you about fire are going to happen on a one-month basis, not a six-month basis, but at some point, we've got to make a decision to try and decide how we're going to deal with this, and that's what we're doing. I mean, we're essentially blazing a little new ground here because nobody's doing this, and trust me, everybody in the state of Oregon is having this same discussion. Well, what are we going to do about this to try and protect not only the port, but the other people who are using the port from potential issues? I mean, you know, we put that new fire hydrant in there based on a net reel fire that we had a couple of years ago because, frankly, running fire hose for a quarter of a mile or half a mile didn't work. So, okay. One more comment. Go ahead.
Yeah. How about a yearly just Coast Guard inspection on the sport boats that they'll come over, do for nothing? They give you a sticker, and they do go through your boat pretty well. On the commercial boats, you get a yearly inspection anyhow if you're going tuna fishing. If you're a real commercial boat, you get your raft inspected, your survival suits. So they have it anyhow.
Is there a cost with the Coast Guard?
Yeah.
Well,
and a current sticker displayed.
The difference that I see with that, though, is that the Coast Guard inspection is the safety inspection. What
right.
We're talking about is a condition inspection, which may be an entirely different thing. I mean, when Ken and I went to school for the Coast Guard to do Coast Guard safety inspection, okay, and we looked at some elements like fire extinguishers and those sort of things, but we had no training and no idea what to do about the structure of the hull, for example. Okay, let's move on.
I got here late, so I need to get a piece of paper to talk.
Yeah.
Can I say something?
Sure.
You're talking about all this boat qualification. I've been here 35 years in the port. Numerous times, I don't have to be told that boat isn't seaworthy. I got one of them sitting down beside me right now that hasn't left the spot in 5 years. You know, so everything you're talking about, qualifying other boats to come in, how about let's just take care of the problems we got right at hand?
That provision is in here.
You know?
So
and let me say one more thing. You're going into this meeting with take, take, take.
from the commercial fishermen, the sports fishermen, and the people in this community. Taking the docks out, closing the roads. You ought to be looking at it the other way. You ought to be doing what you can to try to give people the ability to come down here and enjoy themselves. This is a marina, you know. It's the biggest draw this town has, and yet it seems like you're doing everything you can to discourage people from wanting to be here. That's just my take.
Okay,
you know,
thank
you.
Anyway.
So,
thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Are we
ready? Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to make a recommendation. We've got language to clean up in this, and we haven't got a legal opinion on the live-in, so I'd like to table it till the next meeting or the workshop. Yeah, get answers to those things.
Thank you.
So I also have something to say for you, Richard, is I believe that when you bring this back to us again, when the staff does for us, I would like to have at least an option in here that we could keep the liquor boards or not, because the way it's written right now, we're totally getting rid of them.
Okay,
so they need to fix the wording on this a little.
If I can encapsulate what was just said. So the request is to defer this to another meeting, to modify the language to include the semi-annual and annual inspections, and to get clarification from the attorney about where we stand with the liabilities for liquor boards. That's correct?
Yes. They can write up language that we need.
Okay.
To offer liquor boards.
All right. So we'll defer this to either the next regular meeting or, if we can, a special meeting somewhere, sometime sooner. But I think we probably should do it at the next regular meeting.
Yeah, I don't think we can vote on anything at a...
No. Well, we can't vote at special meetings, but not at a workshop.
We can.
Sure. We can.
Okay. Not a workshop.
Not a workshop.
Okay. So, you guys clear on that?
Yep.
Okay.
It may be longer than that because the lawyer is busy now. So,
okay.
We'll get back to it.
Okay, budget committee selection.
Does this have a clarification vote, I guess, to hold this to for that action?
All right. You want to make a motion, or do you want me to just...
I'll make a motion that we defer... Action item A, mortgage license agreement revision, to be held at, brought back to the commission at either a special meeting or a regular meeting after they have been able to contact and have correspondence with the attorney.
I second it.
Can I amend your motion?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I would amend your motion to include the instructions to staff that we're going to write the provisions in for semi-annual and annual permits requiring an inspection of new boats, and that we're going to look at the liveaboard issue, particularly with the advice of the attorney.
Right.
Okay. That's cover everything we talked about.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, do you agree to the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. So we have an agreed-to amendment. We agree to it as amended. Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second on an amended motion. I'm getting confused now. Okay. So I'll call the question, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Budget committee selection. So we have a list of four names to fill three vacancies on the budget commission. We have the, what we did is each commissioner reviewed the qualifications and the applications of the people that applied. We provided a ranking order from most favorable to least favorable, that's not the way to put it, from most qualified to least qualified. Provided that to Gary, he's given us a list. So we have a list here that is arranged from most favorable, again, from most qualified to least qualified. And so in order, we have Al Cornell, Wayne King, and Brett Heston. Okay. All right. So, with that order in mind, would you care to make a motion?
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve the new budget committee members to fill vacant position six, name Al Cornell, vacant position seven,
Wayne King,
and vacant position 10 with Brett
Hester,
all for a 3-year term.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to action item C, the delinquent account write-off request.
All right, we reviewed this in our workshop meeting. This is the Moore's holder that left the boat here before he had to take care of the boat. These charges are boat storage, boat removal, and boat disposal, and he is ignoring our calls for payment. So we want to send some questions.
Okay. Questions or discussion? All right. Motion?
I'll make a motion to approve delinquent account write-off of $5,023.64 from accounts receivable and submit the amount to Port Collection Agency.
Second? Okay, we have a motion and a second to take the delinquent account to the collection agency. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. Take us to boat, gear, boat, and trailer storage area. Jerry?
Okay. With our FEMA project continuing to evolve with the gear storage, we've had multiple meetings with the board. We've had approval from the board to use the back area behind our port shop to move some gear storage in that area. The more Travis and I were looking at it, to do that, that basically qualifies that area as another industrial storage area, which would make it more water testing and more likely stormwater improvements and everything else you got to do. So we don't really want to create more industrial areas that we got to take care of. So we'd like to have that area back to like a daily boat storage areas for the daily users of the port. The storage areas are exempt from the, temporary storage parking is exempt from industrial storm water regulations. So anyways, I put a map in there and also kind of reiterating where we're going to put the gear storage, and I kind of made a map that showing how many spaces we can put in there. Most of the gear storage that we currently have will fit in this map that I got in the packet. But they're going to be separated. The crab pots will be up in the green building site area. Some other areas where after the roads are made from the FEMA project, we can use for other bigger storage of boat gear. And then I would like to have an area down by the steel wall area for the bigger stuff. You don't have to travel a long distance with the freezer to store that stuff there. So kind of just clarifying and just reviewing our storage area plan before FEMA's job really kicks off. Then the other thing is we want to improve our storage capacity for the long-term boat trailer storage area that's over by motorcycle shop and Morgan Homes area. So right now we can't fit 25 boats in it, but if we put some ground, you know, regrade the area, delineate the spots, we can put more boats in there.
may have more capacity for that spot. So those are the three things that we're looking at.
Okay. I have some questions. So the real serious part about this gear storage area is we're not meeting our discharge requirements for stormwater runoff.
Correct.
Right? So we're going to have to fix that. And the way to fix that is to pave it. And also control the drainage. Okay? That's correct. What are the consequences if we don't do that?
Consequences will be fines. And then eventually the fines will make you remove everything. The fines will basically destroy the port's funding is what it's going to turn into. And then you're going to be forced to remove all the crab pots and all the gear storage.
Okay. Other question is...
Or you go and pay a super high dollar amount for treatment water, which when we learned from Charleston, it could be up to $500,000 for the initial system. And then treatment water is what?
$90,000 every 2 years.
Right.
Plus the actual discharge cost.
The second question is, you know, we've had a long discussion about the green building site. And we tore it down. And the idea was we were going to put in RV and boat covered storage site. Right? And that's still in the long-term plan, in our strategic business plan.
Yep.
So short-term, we're going to store crab pots on that. Where are they going to go when we get to the point of doing the RV storage site?
We're going to have to increase create other storage sites around the port that we have that we can. Those storage units are going to be heavily used by, or be open for the ability to be used for crab pot storage. And then below, I remember down there where in front of the cold storage or something, in the future we can add like a three-sided building or something that's covered that we can install that can be used for crab pot storage that will keep the stormwater off them and be able to help us pass our stormwater test. But we don't have enough money to build storage units and the three-sided buildings right now. So it is still in the plans. It's just we got to kind of do it one step at a time.
So what happens to the stormwater from the green building site?
It's currently discharged into a culvert that runs between Portside Suites and discharges into the barge basin.
Okay, but it doesn't currently, it currently passes.
No.
It currently, right now, we tested it and it failed in aluminum with nothing in it, you know, other than both storage.
Okay, so what are you going to do to fix that before we put crab pots on?
It's going to be another thing that the port has to do out of, you know, our repairs and maintenance is go through and put in catch basins and possibly more berms of some sort to slow water down and get the heavy metals to fall out before they hit the storm drains. And then you can put treatment inside the storm drains that I think we'll get ahead of, but there is always the chance that we have to add additional treatment after it, given the conditions, how much crab pot cleaning, how much gear type work, cleaning, grinding, anything that happens, all those things are contributing factors when we're testing for the stormwater. So depending on how clean and how well it's kept will depend on the treatment.
We're kind of jumping the gun. I did have an information item about stormwater testing. That was part of, we tested that water, we tested the boat wash. We're going to have to do some additional filtering for the boat wash. So we're just jumping the gun a little bit.
I'm trying to make sure everybody understands that this is not just some notion that somebody said, oh, we'll get rid of all this stuff. There's a purpose behind this, or a reason behind this, why we have to take this action to try and fix our DEQ problem.
Yeah, we've been talking about the last 2 years.
One of the suggested plans came in at $990,000 of different water bioswales around the port to be able to capture our stormwater in our current industrial area, but the port cannot, we can't put biofuels in here. So that's why with the FEMA paving roads, storm drains, catch basins, it's more expensive, but it's the next viable option that we have.
Well, more importantly, it's included in the FEMA remediation situation, so it's not direct 100% out of our pocket.
Yeah, and currently right now, DEQ has our plan, and it is, our plan is what's going to buy us time after we exceed our Tier 2 period, which is in 3 months, six to eight months away, we will exceed Tier 2, and to avoid the fines that we were talking about and shutdown, they have our FEMA plan, and they're waiting for that to be executed, so we'll be able to basically get an extension on what we're doing currently, given that we implement the plan that we currently have.
Yeah, and once we start our FEMA project, and where we encapsulate all these areas that are of concern, then that should cut down those issues in the water, right?
Absolutely. By paving, it's gonna cut down. It will help as long as it stays clean, nice, and neat.
Right.
Well, if I remember from the last time we, I won't say got threatened, but the last time we dealt with fines, it's a daily fine.
Yes. Daily fine that you continue to operate.
So, Gary, are you putting crab pots there too?
That is going to be utilized, that top area for there is going to be basically gear storage for the larger vessels, for outrigger poles, shrimp tanks, doors, nets, things that are going to be longer and take up more area are going to have to go up there.
I didn't know what those numbers were for there.
The smaller ones that you see down there by the steel wall, down farther, that's where it's going to be basically used for winches, gantries, things that are really heavy for us to move around.
My question is Travis, you've alluded to you're catching a storm water off that green building site. Where are you catching that at?
Yeah. It all has when the green building was built, when they got to the point they had drains already put in.
Hard to tell.
Their infrastructure underneath, they tie in the gutters and stuff like that together.
So, but where are, because as a almost a full lifetime member in this community, where the green building was, is all filled. So, and it was lower, and they brought that in. And I understand that that's now our problem, but you said it was all tied into the same storm drain that comes down from Portside Suites and the RV park across the road and the shopping center. My question is we're sure that it's coming off the green building site and not upstream from that storm drain?
Absolutely. I'm not testing it out of that culvert.
Okay.
I'm testing it out of the final exit before it hits that discharge point.
Okay.
Well,
I have
a question.
It is letting me know that the requirements that DEQ has for stormwater testing are very difficult to maintain and keep. Every single port has this exact same problem, are struggling to figure out what they're going to do. Every port does. Like I said, Charleston's Boatyard, they put $500,000 system in, and it cost them $90,000 every 2 years to replace the media bags, which the media and charcoal bags are it's the heavy metals that are very difficult to get out. And the media bags are what absorb all that, but they have a 2-year life expectancy. So they have to collect that water in some 5,000-gallon tank, and then they're testing that water and taking it to the sanitary district to get so it meets their criteria, and then they have to pay for that water to go into the sewer system. That's how they're able... Because even after their treatment, they're meeting the standards for a sewer system. They're not meeting the standards to directly discharge back into the water. So that's discharging into a sewer system is an option. It's extremely expensive, though.
Did you have a comment? Question?
Yes. In regards to the green building site, we're still making a $5,000 or some odd payment per month for that that
it's
site, it's even though we took the building down.
It's $2,000.
$2,000?
Yeah.
Okay. If we use FEMA money to pave that area, for the stormwater, we could then afford to pay to have the buildings for RV storage and boat storage completed. The difference in the rate, 50 cents a square foot for the RV and boat storage versus the 20 or 6 cents a square foot that we charge for an improved ground, is quite substantial. Is there a reason we don't want to pursue that?
Pursue paving the green building area?
Yes.
One of the main things, one of the main reasons is right now it's not in the plan to pave that. But if we're going to utilize that, say for crab pot storage, and we utilize our current rates, means our current gear storage users would see a significant raise from, say, 6 cents a square foot to 50 cents a square foot to be able to use that. And in our talks and how we've done it, we're just not at the point yet where we're ready to pull that trigger and make that kind of a increase, given the money that we have to do the project that we're doing. It is in the plan. We do want to do it. It's just the port doesn't have that kind of revenue to include it in the FEMA project right now.
Because we have to match
it. Well, we have to match it, and we only have a certain amount of money. We only have a certain amount of money from Business Oregon for matching what we can put into it and what FEMA is actually going to pay out. And to get the boatyard in front of the cold storage and our roads put through with storm drain, we're eating, and then do our dredging, we're eating through that money really fast. And to expand any more paving, possibly if we get our quotes back and we're under our budgeted number, but right now I don't really foresee us coming under. But if we do, we can look at other areas to pave, which will help with stormwater.
Any other comment?
Yeah, I got a question. Did we got this aluminum, apparently water coming out of the green dome. Did somebody dump some bad material in there and cause this? I mean, where did it come from?
I have a feeling that probably we've only tested it once, okay, but the fill that was brought in could have had it in it.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious. Did somebody dump off some bad stuff?
Very well could have. But we fail aluminum in every site except the fuel dock.
Okay, that's it.
Aluminum, zinc, and copper, it's everywhere.
Okay, so it's just something that occurs all the time. Well, it's nothing new to us.
The reality is, we've been living with a moving target on pollution for as long as I've been alive. I mean, I work for a state agency, and we took the waste oil from all our diesel trucks and poured it on weeds.
Well, yeah.
And 40 years later, we had to dig it all up and get it clean. So, I mean, things have changed. It's not like everybody's doing something bad. We're just living with what's accumulated for a long time. Now we're in this position where we're going to try and fix it. And so, ultimately, in looking at this across the port and talking to the engineer, the only cheap way to fix it is to pave it, so they'll allow you to cover it up. Otherwise, we'd have to dig the dirt down 3 feet.
Paving's gonna get you back to square one, and when you have a working port or any working commercial area, you have your industrial zones, and that's why we want to put in roads that are going through our gear storage area. So our gears are right now our industrial footprint because of the lack of drainage and everything we have in there. The entire gear storage area is an industrial zone. Everywhere from the plant there all the way to really the boatyard, it's all industrial because there's no main roads to separate exempt areas. There's no distinguished areas that we actually consider an industrial footprint. And by doing this, we're taking our 8 acres of industrial footprint and trying to minimize it where the storage is actually happening and put in more roads, parking areas, which are exempt from stormwater testing. That's why we don't have to test roads from the highway. That's why we don't test the water coming out of culverts. It's exempt. But if you're using, the contaminants, then unfortunately in the marine world, zinc, copper, aluminum, are very common things that you find in the industry. And so we're just trying to minimize that footprint and try and make it to where we can all still be down here and work and minimize that, those testing requirements.
Okay. Any further board discussion? Entertain a motion.
Okay, I'll make the motion. Approve new gear storage area as shown on the proposed drawing. Approve grading and placing of gravel with
delineation
of all at the long-term boat and trailer storage area, and approve the daily boat and trailer storage area behind the fourth shop.
Okay, we have a motion and second on the boat trailer storage area. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to action item E, port rates July 31st, 2022 to June 30th, 2023.
Okay, so every year we do this review, and every year we always use our rate increases based on CPI, which is all Western urban consumers CPI, which comes from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And luckily, past years, it was only 1.7% or 1.2%, low percentage, but last year was 4.5. So I didn't come up with a 4.5 myself. This came from the inflation from U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. So I'm just following what we normally do is our costs increase just as much as anybody else's, and our leases at our majority of our leases here have a CPI increase, so they get hit with a 4.5% automatically every time they have their annual renewal happens. So this kind of keeps in pace with our leases as well as other rates. So any questions on that CPI and 4.5% where I came up with that number?
Well, as long as I've been here, that's what we've been doing on an annual basis, is looking at CPI cost of living increases.
Normally, we do have a resolution that says it says that we normally raise it 5%, and then we could add another 2% for dredging. I'm not asking for any one of those. I'm just asking for a CPI increase.
Okay. That's on CPI. So... Boatyard.
If you want, I can just go through each section where we're recommending some of the increases. So on section one, CPI increase for all equipment rental rates that we have is a 4.5% increase overall. The gear storage areas, we're asking for a 4 cent increase. That's more than 4.5%. The reasoning is because we're handling and dealing with stormwater issues. So that's the reason, and also administrative costs to maintain our gear storage. So that's one reason we're asking for a 4 cent increase. It hasn't, that 6 cents has been there for, ever since I've been here. It's never been raised that I'm aware of since I've been here. We're adding a welding plug rate, $20 per day, and then the we're asking for a rate for long-term boat trailer storage to be $100 per month instead of $61, and also creating a new daily rate of $10 per day with a maximum of 10 days for, you know, the, I guess you call it transient boat trailer storage people.
Yeah.
So any questions on section one area?
Mm-hmm. No comment here?
Yes, if we're going to raise our gear storage and mooring fees, then I think you should raise the rent, the retail complex, and Russ's rent, and every single person that pays this port needs to have their rent raised.
It does. It does.
They did?
It gets a CPI.
Everybody does. And they're okay with that. Not just single one group. Everybody is.
And you know, another thing I don't think that we've made clear to the public is this wastewater, this water problem that we have with the testing, it costs every time we do it, it's over $1,000 just for the testing.
And that's done, four times a year, and we have to take them to grants back.
Unfortunate. I mean, it's just something we're dealing with from years of living here.
I mean, ultimately, the reality, if you really want to cut to the chase on what's costing us a lot of money, is it's government regulated.
Thank you.
I mean, if we're wastewater treatment problems, any permitting we do twice as expensive as it used to be. So a lot of the costs that we're absorbing are things that we can't control. It's just what it costs to do business. And, you know, I think probably we're absolutely as frustrated as anybody else, because it seems like every time you do something, here comes somebody who didn't expect. Either the bids don't come in close, you know, they're so far above what we can afford to pay that we can't do it. Permitting costs more, you know, we got to hire engineers to help us get this stuff done. We hire people to write stormwater mitigation plans and pollution control plans for us so we can meet the requirements. It's just, okay, I'll get off my soapbox.
So I just want to clarify, most leases, commercial leases, has a CPI, annual CPI increase. There's a few of them that have long-term leases that they made an agreement with the board, like every 5 years, it increases 10%. So it's like a 2% increase. So, but there's a few of those that have that kind of a.
But those are for much longer.
Right.
Right. Special circumstances.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Move on. Go ahead.
All right. So the boatyard. So the boatyard, we're asking to kind of change, overhaul our rates, how we do our rates. Is this a recommendation? And I'll let Travis speak about this since he's firsthand knowledge of the boatyard.
So with the boatyard, is what we're asking is for flat rates. It's what same kind of format that Charleston uses right now. And the reason being is that when we pick up a boat at, say, 20 feet and we pick up a boat that's 50 feet, the guys, our labor, our machine, the wear and tear is all the same. The boat stands, I mean, we're talking the difference between two boat stands, maybe four boat stands. Everything that's happening, that machine's just doing the same thing over and over regardless what we put in. So is what I've considered is that going to what Charleston does and just do a flat rate, no matter how big your boat is, it's a flat rate. I think we have it at $600. That will include 1 hour of pressure washing, which currently we charge separately. And that the additional cost of basically with pressure washing after that is that we purchased the boat wash cleaning system to be able to discharge that water. And it's going to help, again, pay for cleaning the water and better maintenance in our travel list. So your smaller boats will see a significant increase. Your bigger boats won't see as much. It actually might be less with pressure washing being included.
But the point of the flat fee is that what we're trying to cover the cost of is port staff, the use of the lift, and that stays exactly the same no matter how big your boat is. So it makes more sense to go to a flat rate than it does to go to a per foot rate.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have a question on that. I understand you're training Kenny at the boat shop to run the travel lift.
He has been trained on it, yes.
Okay, so he's not a port employee. What's his position in this? Does he lease the travel lift? And
the port staff still does all the haul outs. Kenny leases the boatyard area, the dry dock area, which he collects the fee, the daily fee for the boats being up there. But the port will still do all the haul outs. Kenny is in the event that we ever decide that we want to lease the entire thing out and not have the port doing part of it and then Kenny doing part of it, it's just another option in the future that we open to do and have more people trained that can run it other than Travis.
And he's certified now.
Yes.
What about liabilities, the fact that he's not a port employee?
He's been trained on it, but he's not running it.
Right. So in the future, if he did run it, what would we have to do?
We would have to talk to insurance companies and decide how we would lease it and, you know, how that liabilities would go. But I think we'd run into issues right now because we're still making a payment on it and we can't sublease a unit that we're going to maintain.
But at the point, if that ever occurred and Kenny took over, then this payment schedule wouldn't be applicable anymore. That would be up to him, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the insurance coverage would, I'm sure, be up to him.
Mm-hmm.
Not
only. There would be leasing that, you know, many boatyards are ran and operated by private businesses.
Well, we don't need to get into that because that's not part of it here.
It's down the road.
This is confusing enough. So, okay. So go ahead.
And then basically it's a flat rate, like a one way going to a trailer would be $400. Now going to a trailer, typically it takes more time and takes more guys with more eyes to be able to put on there. So, it is a little bit more than just half the trip, you know, so that's why we went with $400 for that. And I think it was still $250 for, an emergency type call out that would be on top of a haul out, say after hours, in an emergency type situation.
I don't want to stifle comments and cut things off, but you know, we got to keep them to a minimum so that we got a lot of stuff to cover here. We're only halfway through. So did you have a comment?
The only thing I wanted to know is you're going to give 1 hour of cleaning away?
In that 600.
Port employee?
No, that will be the person present.
So who is paying that?
Who? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Okay.
The question.
Is the boat owner cleaning the boat, or is the port cleaning the boat?
Yes. They
don't get their boat cleaned in 1 hour. Then what's the rate?
$70 per hour. And I'm sorry, I know I didn't say that. It's on there under D. That additional hour would be $70 per hour.
Okay.
And that pays for the water and the water cleaning that happens with that. Okay. Now, I know Kenny at the post office, if you so choose, he does offer a service that he can do it. It'll just be at an additional cost.
80.
Yeah, it's at an additional cost what you need to work out with him.
Okay. All right, what's next, Morridge?
Yeah, Morridge. Yeah, so Morridge, we talked about this in a workshop. The board wanted to see some options on the rates, equaling the rates. So I put some options in there for you to review and discuss.
Okay, so option one is the cost of living adjustment, 4.5%. Option two is the cost of living plus $2 a foot increase in commercial rates. Option three is the 4.5 increase plus $3. And option four is the 4.5 plus an additional $9.05 a foot to match recreational rates. And then a 10% increase in liveaboard fees from $75 to $82.50. And a discount for annual boat launch for local residents with a zip code ending in 97415. Senior citizens 65 and over, and veterans, active, retired, or disabled with proof of ID. And that would be a 20% discount?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Questions, discussion?
Option five. So this boat launch discount for the veterans and the retired and the disabled, is our machine capable of handling all that?
All annual launch pads have to be purchased at our office. The launch machine just does daily.
Right.
Our launch fees are $5.
Mm-hmm. Can't change it unless
we can't
get approval from the Oregon State Green Board.
So I just don't understand.
No, we're not
doing an annual.
This is an annual, the annual permit.
We've always offered it.
Yeah.
We've always offered an annual.
No, no, no. I'm talking about the discount.
Oh, the discount. No, we never offered a discount.
This I mean, we're at $5.
No.
I don't understand that discount.
For
the discount isn't
not daily.
The discount isn't for the daily launch fee. It's for the annual permit.
Oh.
If you want to buy an annual permit, it's $150, right?
Right.
Yeah, because we raised that fee.
So with a 20% discount, you would go to $120. And the rationale for it, so everybody in this room that lives within the tax district is paying tax. And there are a lot of folks that buy annual permits here that don't come from here. So I guess my thoughts on it were we can give the local residents a 20% discount on an annual launch fee.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Does that go for commercial fishermen or anybody?
No.
Why?
Right now we're confining it to the annual launch permit.
Well.
Not anybody else.
I mean, we can use
well, one I'm just saying, our bet.
Right.
Because we have warrants.
Live here.
You can hold it.
I mean, if they can't hold it,
do we have to stay with the CPI? I mean, it's just a graph of living, right? The cost of living. Now, I still have an issue with can the port at this point, where we're just draining money, we're not making any money, we're just draining money. Can the port afford 15 boat owners of the sportage, yank their boats out, because the boat test is 5% free rate. Now you have a $20,000 hit at the end of that year. I would just say, please reconsider this 4.5 and you proceed with caution. People are strained already.
I guess I would answer you this way. The 4.5 cuts both ways. The CPI cuts both ways. So we could just say, rather than following CPI, we're going to bump the rates by 10% a year. And that to me is kind of defeats what we're trying to use the CPI for, which is to just keep us even. As everybody else costs go up, so do our costs.
So you're comparing it to Chevron and Union 76. If one raises
no,
their rate a dollar, then we're going to
what I'm telling you is, so if CPI, which it has been bumping along 1.7%, we've gone 1.7% rather than saying we're going to raise it $5 or $10 every year. So what we're trying to do is find the number, which is the CPI, that says if your costs go up this much, then we're going to raise our fee that much to offset it. We're just trying to break even. We're not even trying to make money on this. That's the purpose of that.
Okay.
You don't think that volume with people keeping their boats in the slips is going to offset? Because I know numerous people that will jerk their boats out. They've just had enough. Somewhere along the line, the volume is going to have to make up. Let's get some boats in the slips.
Okay. Well, let us deal with this. We're going to have to move on and get this thing dealt with. We can.
No, but at the end, we're the ones that have to deal with it.
Yep. So do we.
Well, okay.
Okay. We're not done yet. What else? We got fuel?
Yeah, Section 4 talks about our fuel rates. We haven't touched our fuel rates since 2018, so we never raised our rates CPI-wise or not. So we're asking for a 5-cent increase on the diesel fuel retail rate and no increase on the gas.
Okay, so to be clear, this 5 cents is on top of what you pay for fuel.
Correct.
Correct? And this is to help us offset the cost of cleaning the filters or having the filters changed, cleaning the tank.
It's yeah. The maintenance of our facility plus our employees pumping at the paperwork. So that 5-cent increase, that's instead of 30 cents, now it's going to be 35 cents for purchase price.
What we purchase it for.
And over the wall.
Okay. Yeah, and then also we're asking for a 4-cent increase over the wall price per gallon.
Okay.
But you're
RV park?
RV park, looking at, the RV park rates haven't changed since I've been here. We're asking for a $1 increase for all daily rates, $5 increase for weekly rates, and then the non-refundable transaction fee, which used to be $5 now, we're asking for, to bring it up to meet the state of Oregon's, so it'd be $8 non-transferable rate. Any questions on that one before?
How's that fee work? Do you have someone books and then cancels?
Yes, they get, they have to, yeah.
Cause the fee.
Yeah, when they book it and they pay for it, we're getting hit with the merchant fees. Mm-hmm. And plus whatever we got to deal with the administrative side of canceling their stay and all that stuff. So.
And we see it happening more and more and more with the amount of recreational camping that happens. I mean, the sites fill up as soon as they come available. And a lot of people go through and book these sites and then figure out what their plans are going to be and they cancel. And then we're usually stuck holding a pretty large transaction fee after refund.
Yeah. And do we probably lose, because it's been booked, people move on, and so it's harder to fill that spot? Or
yeah, typically, you know, it's just, it's really not so much if we can fill it or not, it's just to deal with them canceling and us refunding their money after we've already absorbed a transaction fee.
And finally, administration fee. So this is for rental of for property agreement.
On which, when you're talking about?
Section 6.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
But there's no comparison on this, Gary.
You start here $1.
So that's a CPI increase of 4.5%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for all the, anybody coming in here, it's going to match their rates coming in with, yeah, it's little. But we're also asking for a 2-cent increase for the bare ground rate to match the gear storage rates. I think there's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, the 2 cents.
Right. And then Section 7, the administrative fees, kind of just clarify the events at the port. Instead of breaking up half the boardwalk, just make the whole boardwalk available for anybody who wants it. It's just one flat fee.
Oh, okay. So that, okay. I understand that now. It's like, oh, this came over in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So, okay. So it's
the entire boardwalk.
You're getting the entire boardwalk.
Yeah, if you decide to use half of it, then that's your decision. And then increasing the Saturday market per vendor 50 cents to $11. Right now it's currently $10.50.
Yeah.
Then a car show, it's currently $5.50. It's raising $6 per car.
Okay. Okay. So that's the proposed rate.
Mm-hmm.
Discussion. Yes. Discussion, question.
I guess I that one, if on my four options, if there's a fifth option the board wants to discuss, I mean, I just threw out the four options that we talked about in the workshop. So if there's another option.
You're talking about mortgage.
The mortgage, right.
All right. Okay. Well, you know, I'm trying to accommodate as much as I can, but we're going to chase this all night. Go ahead.
Okay. I got a deal about that permit to sell fish off of your boat. Any of us that do it, we got to have a $200 bond by the state. The state charges us $50 for that license. You don't think it's a little doofy, $165? I mean, aren't we supposed to be drawing people to this port? I mean, we're $115 more than what the state charges us? Come on. That's like highway robbery.
The reason for the fee, Gary? I mean, what was the reason why we
There was a resolution about 30 years ago that established the fee.
No way.
Yeah, it was about.
No.
Yeah, it was.
No, it was a resolution. You haven't been here 30 years. It started out free, then $10, then $20, then $40. And then it comes off with this, okay? That's why over the dock, fuel or fish, we don't have no live fires here. The only port on the whole coast. The whole coast, this is usually the highest fuel and the highest for anybody to come in here, which would feed all the hotels, restaurants, benefit the whole community. And there's just stupid shit like this. Excuse my mouth. But we all bitch that we got to pay too much tax to the state. The state's $50.
Yes, I understand.
We're coming to Brookings Harbor to pay $165. Ain't nobody going to come here. After a while, the people that are here can't pay no more. I mean, we got people here that are making more money than I've ever, you know, that's asinine to me that. But anyway, that $165, I've been to other port meetings saying, come on. But if you even punch in on your phone, what is the cost of that? I can't even think of the name of it right now.
Limited seller
permit to sell, whether it's tuna, salmon, crab, rockfish, whatever. It's $50. That's what our state charges us. And our dear old port wants a focus of $165. They're working with us, all right.
Okay, so we're at the decision point.
The what?
The decision point. So we're at the point we have a proposed motion, and it allows you to select whichever option on mooring rates you would like, and it includes the rest of the mooring rates as discussed.
I have a question on the 165. Gary, what do they get for the 165 from the port? Do we provide any equipment?
I don't think so.
Just the privilege.
It's probably what it is. I really don't know without looking at the resolution again and see what it actually says.
I mean, if it's just because we inherited it from previous commissions that we were going to charge 165 and we're not doing anything, I agree with them.
It's actually 42. It's not 50.
Just for the state?
Yeah.
State.
Oh, that's just 42.
Okay.
I have one too.
Appreciate you bringing it up.
Okay.
Cool. You could lower, you know.
So we're looking for a motion that can include in here all of the things we've discussed.
Mm-hmm. You know, lower? Okay.
I'm not in the race for nothing, so you guys make the motion.
Well, I'll make a motion to the proposed draft port rate starting July 1st, 2022 through June 30th, 2023 to include mortgage option 1, 4.5% increase to all rates with the exception of the 165. I think that should be eliminated.
Well, you propose to eliminate it entirely.
Pardon me?
You propose to eliminate it entirely.
Yes.
Can we,
if we're not doing any, we're not providing any service for it, there's no reason to have it. And I agree that the commercial fishermen are providing a service to the public and selling off the boats.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I'm clear. So your motion is option 1, eliminate the $165, what is that fee called?
Permit to sell fish from your boat.
I think you want to keep some kind of a permission to sell fish off the boat. I don't think you just want to open a door to sell whatever you want off your boat.
They have to have a license from the state.
I know, but if you come to the office and you fill out a form, I don't care if you pay $10 to the port, but at least you can show that you have a license to do that for the safety of the public. Because you know you will have people out there that will sell things that are not good for you. I just think it's a safety issue.
I agree that there should be some sort of quality control of something you have to sign with something that...
Open health department.
that, okay, but remember, you're operating out of the Port of Brookings. When you pay the state, we don't get any of that money from the state. We don't see anything. So in the best interest of the port, selling your permit, you by extra permit, maybe it's not $165. Maybe it's closer to what the state does. Maybe it's $10 or $15. But the port needs to know who's selling fish off their boat, who's coming here. We do need to have some sort of quality control over what's happening, other than I can just sell whatever I want whenever I want with no charge, no talking to the port at all.
And it's not refrigerated.
The state does not give us anything back for any. You know, I understand you guys are paying it. I understand.
You don't give us anything either.
Okay, that's your opinion.
I say, how about if we? I'll go with this. If you reduce the management pay, how's that?
Let's hold it down. Okay, so
I'll modify my motion.
You want to modify your motion?
I'm not getting nothing.
Okay, well, that's your opinion on what you think that you get. You do have security. You do have security cameras that watches over it.
Correct.
You do have port employees that provide things for you guys down in the dock. We do provide things for you. To say that you don't get anything from this port.
Travis, we've got a modification to the motion, or an addition to the motion.
Modifying my motion to charge $10 in lieu of the $165 they've been paying in the past.
Okay, so to restate your motion, it is to approve the proposed port rate starting July 1st to include option one, 4.5 increase in all rates, and to reduce the on-boat fish sale permit from $165 to $10.
Yes.
That's correct. All right. We have a motion. We have a second. I'll second it. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Everybody clear? Or do you want me to restate it a third time? Okay. All right. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
No.
Joe?
No.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. That brings us to action item F, the commercial wages. Gary?
Okay, port staff is recommending that we kind of expand our place for our recreational fish cleaning station to include a commercial fillet station. It's basically taking the storage area and creating that as a special place for the non-commercial charter boats to go clean their fish, providing some amenity.
Realizing that we're now charging them $300 fee to use the port
commercial. Right.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. And this is for people that like come in, they're not mooring, they're not slipping, they're just like a day use. And if they want to come use a cleaning station, we're going to provide them a space free of charge.
Yeah, and that combination will just keep annually and give it out to the people that come in and pay the fee and entertain this station. That's how they'll get the combination for it.
The VIP fish cleaning?
It's for charters and guys that are paid.
Is it that they use that, or is it just optional?
It's a good idea.
It's just giving them an option because a lot of them are river boats, you know, stuff that they come here from Grants Pass, and if they're going to pay the fee to blow the fish out of here, they don't really have any other place, being their fish station right now, for commercial use is prohibited.
Yeah,
so we want to give them a place.
Nothing.
How much
is
it
going to
cost?
The size, 9 by 12.
One last comment. I was a fishing guy for 35 years. I had OR numbers on my boat, just like a sport boat. No different. A guy should not be charged to clean his fish at the port. They use the port, they pay the launch, but they have OR numbers just like the people that clean their fish there.
Is there a charge for
that? No, there's no charge.
Is there a charge?
We're not charging anybody.
There is no charge. There is no charge.
But if they're going to have to start going to the commercial cleaning thing? A fishing guy when he pulls up?
Yeah, he'll just go over to the other place on the river.
Well, they won't pay for it, let them use it.
They don't pay that, just come in and be a guy.
No matter what.
That's a guy.
They won't pay it.
Okay, we're going to deal with this. Do we have a motion?
Before we make the motion, I think this is pretty broad. I was told that, you know, how they kind of plan on doing that. But we don't have a cost not to exceed here. So don't you think we should include that?
For a cost not to exceed?
For development of the station.
Putting that in, I mean, we're going to probably have stainless steel tables or whatever.
It will be at a cost of a table.
We always hire plumbers and everybody else.
We don't hire plumbers for anything over there. And we will have to provide a table. That we'll have to find, but it's only going to be one table.
So the expense will be the cutting server.
Yes.
The aluminum and the stainless steel plumbing. If you do stainless steel.
Yes.
So that's the expense, and I don't know what one of those tables cost.
I'm going to look at the most cost-effective way to put up a table that I don't think it's going to cost a lot of money to provide one table in there. The cutting tops is probably going to cost the most.
If I remember those cutting tops,
what we paid?
I'm pretty sure that each side was $60.
Yeah, what I have planned is probably a whole sheet, and it's probably close to $400 for a sheet.
Okay.
So
plus transportation.
So it's probably under $1,000.
Yeah. Roughly, yeah, $1,000. I mean, well within. I mean, we're not going to go through spending a whole bunch of money at this, but we're going to try and give them a suitable, nice, clean area for them to both clean their fish, and we're going to move on. We're not going to be spending $5,000, $10,000 on it. I mean, $1,000, $2,000 within what we can spend.
Okay.
I think it's the most it's going to cost.
Okay.
And they'll keep our docks cleaner, too, because they won't be cleaning down the boat.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have a couple of questions, I guess. We're already charging them an annual thing now. They're going to get a sticker annually, so we'll know who they are. What's the rationale for not just let them use the existing with everybody else?
There's not enough room for one.
Because it's non-commercial use
over
there.
Mm-hmm. From the state
rainbow. Same building, same roof.
Gives them an area to work.
It's going to give them a space that I think is going to melt it, make them feel, you know, as if their money's going towards something that's a use for them.
Well,
it's not going to be open to everybody. It is going to have a lock on it that they will be, people that have the sticker will have the combination to it. It'll be up to them to keep it closed when it's not used, but it's trying to not mingle them too much with our sport fishermen, and it clogs the hole, and it creates very contentious.
The biggest service I can see is, so they come in from a day, they've got six clients. I don't want all those people standing in line
That's
when
right.
going to the regular cleaning station. So
That's
if they
right.
can if they can go in, clean their fish, get their clients on the road headed home as quickly as possible, I think that makes sense, and that's a service that I think we can provide.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
how many charter boats go over there and clean fish?
They don't clean their boats.
They clean them on their boat, and they take
currently
them
right
leftovers
now,
out,
no
dump them the next
mess,
day.
No.
They take them out to sea and
dump them the next day.
Well, they have to, yeah.
I know two charters that do clean in there.
And I'm not saying that people go in there and they don't.
I know you don't.
But,
you don't have control of
but
that.
We're just trying to
help
give
them
areas that in the event that you're into doing it the way the process is set up to be, you have a place to go.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
So
was there a problem with this?
I
missed it. I was in her brother, so.
No
problem.
Okay.
I just wanted to hear if
there
was a problem.
And all it is last year you were concerned about traffic flow, people getting in and out the ramps when they were launching boats, and you were trying to reduce the flow of traffic going around there. This is going to increase that, because now you're going to have people going over there and pick up their fish. You don't have adequate parking to start with over there. Not against it. I understand and I like the idea, but I think you need to find a better suitable place so you don't impact your traffic flow.
We don't have one.
Not yet.
We don't have one for a lot of reasons. So right now we're covered under our DEQ discharge permit at that site. So without creating a whole new can of worms, that's the most expeditious way we can do it. Okay. Motion to approve remodeling the existing fish station storage room to install a weight table for commercial use.
I'll second it.
That commercial use before you. How many commercial fish am I going to say? You just
charge
allowed me to.
Yeah,
play my
fish there.
So you might want to put
change this, because I don't want... Heck, if I come here and I've got... I'm a commercial fisherman. You just said right there, commercial use. I can fillet my fish.
By permit.
I just want to make sure.
By permit.
We can say for hire.
So we need to change the motion then?
I'm not against you.
Trying to clean it up again.
It's a good idea.
Just the, instead of the end saying just commercial use, you need to then buy again.
Commercial for hire fishing vessel.
Or chartering guides. Chartering guides use. I mean, that's what our intentions for the sticker, the people that are paying it, are more our chartering guides.
You want to restate the motion?
Okay.
Withdraw the original motion. Restate.
Redraw the original. Withdraw the original. Motion to approve remodel the existing fish station storage room to install a fish table for charter boat for hire and.
What is
guide use.
Guides and charter boat.
Guides and charter
use. Guides and charter use only. Okay. Okay.
Second.
And I will make a sign to reflect that.
Okay, now we have a motion for a second. Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Okay. Item G, Port Manager Employment Agreement Amendment Number 2.
This explains that the amendment to allow me to drive a vehicle, port vehicle, instead of my personal vehicle. Port use.
Okay.
Right.
So this eliminates your vehicle allowance that you recently had.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any questions, comments?
No. Motion?
Motion.
Motion to approve draft employee agreement amendment number 2.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to informational items, the FEMA project update.
All right, I thought I was going to have more drawings, more updates for you. I did give you an update from my manager's report, but we'll probably have a special meeting or a workshop in a couple weeks with all the drawings and a better update about the funding and all that stuff with the FEMA project.
Okay. All right. 2022 salmon season. Not good. So the Pacific Fisheries Management Council met for 7 days ending Monday to develop the 3 alternatives for public review. Those are out now for public comment. There will be it's going to be a virtual public hearing on the 25th of this month at 7 o'clock. The information for getting onto that will be on the council website, because it'll be a Zoom thing again.
7 o'clock.
We originally intended 3 public meetings, one in Westport, one in Coos Bay, and one in Eureka. And because of the new requirements, trying to have an in-person meeting with a hybrid meeting, it just didn't work. So it's going to go virtual again. So I will give you the alternatives. Mel, how much detail do you want? I mean, do you want to know why, or do you care?
No, we care.
Okay. Okay. All right. So the target we're chasing this year are Klamath age 4 fish. So we have a requirement to have in the Klamath River a minimum adult spawner escapement to natural areas of 40,700 fish. And we're also capped at a 16% ocean harvest rate on Klamath 4-year-old. The 4-year-old Klamath fish is actually a surrogate for the listed California coastal Chinook. That's the eel, mad, Matole, and Russian River. So they're listed. So this is a consultation standard, meaning that the National Marine Fisheries Service, as part of the listing, has to do what's called a consultation and establish a court-accepted standard, which in this case was 16%. the fishery has not met that 16% standard for 4 consecutive years. And we're way over it. Not like we did 17, you know, 18. It was 28, 29, 30. So that places our fishing season in potential legal jeopardy. So if we continue to not meet that 16%, the National Marine Fisheries Service has told us they will not continue to authorize that, because what the reality is somebody, pick your NGO, can file a motion in court for an immediate injunction on your season. And that's what everybody's worried about. So that said, National Marine Fisheries Service came into the middle of our meeting and changed the standard from 16% to 10%. Which is a massive whack. Okay, so that's the background. Now to the bottom line. Commercial alternatives. Humboldt Mountain, the Oregon California border, alternative 1, March 15th to April 30th, June 1 to 30, or the earlier of 800 snook quota, July 1 to 31, or the earlier of 400 fish, August 1 to 28, or the earlier of 200 chinook. Let's see, June 1 to August 28th, weekly landing and possession limit of 50 chinook per vessel. Any remaining portion of the chinook quotas may be transferred in season on an impact neutral basis to the next open quota period. Very similar to what we've done in the past. Alternative 2, March 1 to April, March 15 to April 30, June 1 to 30, or the earlier of 550 chinook, July 1 to 31, or the earlier of 200 chinook. That one has a June 1 to July 31 weekly landing and possession limit of 20 chinook per vessel. All areas fishing in this area during June and July must land and deliver all salmon within this area or into Port Orford within 24 hours of any closure of the fishery. Alternative 3, March 15 to May 14, May 23 to 31, June 1 to 30, or the earlier of 800 chinook, July 1 to 31, or the earlier of 500 chinook. June 1 to July 31, weekly and possession limit of 50 chinook per vessel. And the week is Thursday through Wednesday. That's troll. Recreational. So, alternative 1, Cape Falcon to the Oregon-California border. All salmon Mark's Let Co. fishery. June 18th to the earlier of August 21 or 100,000 Mark Coho quota. Alternative 2. June 25th or the earlier of August 21st or a 97,000 mark coho quota. Alternative 3, June 25th through the earlier of August 31st or a 95,000 mark, that one all goes to Cape Falcon to Humboldt Mountain, so it doesn't include us. June 25th through the earlier of August 31st or 95,000 mark quota.
Richard? Yeah, real quick. Now, those you just read, those last three options, are for coho only, correct?
That's coho.
Recreational.
So, for chinook.
Yeah. Okay.
Cape Falcon, Humboldt Mountain, March 15th to May 15th, May 16th to October 31. Alternative 2 is the same. Alternative 3 is March 15th to May 15th, May 16th to July 31st, and September 1 to October 31st. So what that's telling you is that in the area between Cape Falcon and Humboldt Mountain and Alternative 3, Chinook is closed in August.
So I just want to make sure with everybody understood the difference between coho and that season.
Right. So for us in the zone, recreation. Alternative 1, May 21 to June 27th. July 1st to August. July 1st to August 19th, June 25th to July 31st. So what that basically says is we will be fishing coho with the South of Falcon fishery, and then we will have chinook
with the alternatives I just read. The reason I closed alternative three to coho fishing here is because I need an affirmative statement from people that they do want to fish coho. Because we have had a mixed bag over the years, people saying we don't want to fish coho, we don't want coho, this isn't a coho port, we want to catch them. So the input I'm looking for, the way I have these seasons designed, July is free, essentially. We only have 22 Klamath impacts in July, so we can do that. So I designed one set of seasons where the days are on the front end of that, and one set of seasons where on the back end of that, and one that's pretty much centered on July. So the question is, do you want to fish July and part of August, or do you want to fish July and part of June? And do you want to fish coho? So that's how these are arranged and set up. Okay.
Thank you.
That's
they
it.
They just
want to
fish.
Yeah. Well, if you're interested in more detail, I have, these are what are called hot spot or stop and go maps. And it shows you impact by day in all the various catch areas on Klamath 4-year-olds. And that, this is what we use to try and figure out how to make all this work. But Oregon got squeezed by Klamath on the south and by Tule Chinook on the north. So we are what we are. And California is going to really bleed this year. California got 80% of the Chinook on the coast last year. Their projected catch for commercial, I think, was 53,000. They caught 225,000. So they're now, that now raises their impact rate significantly. So then that means they lose opportunity.
Yeah, great year.
Cool. Okay. Ms. Stacy, best of update.
Thanks. All right. The last meeting we reviewed the family has reinstated insurance coverage on the vessel, Ms. Stacy. The marine survey was scheduled for March 25th. And the family does intend to crab next season with the vessel, and the port liens are still on the crab pots and the crab permit. And the mortgage renewal is on hold until further notice. The March 25th marine survey was canceled due to them getting sick and being quarantined. So they're trying to reschedule their survey, and they haven't given me a new date yet. Then they also told me that they're still having problems with SBA not releasing the documents so they can put the boat into the new person's name. So I haven't had any updates in the last couple weeks from them.
Okay. Stormwater test results.
All right, we touched a little bit about the stormwater test results. Like we talked about the green building, we wanted to see what the green building site was going to have before we put anything there, and lo and behold, we had failed at aluminum criteria benchmark. It was about twice as much as what the DEQ benchmark is. It was 2.06 and their benchmark 1.1. We did just another test, I think it was Tuesday, it was yesterday, from the last rain that we had, so we're going to, you know, test it again to see if maybe we had a bad test or whatever. Let's see what the next test comes up with. We did test the boat yard wash system. We were kind of curious at how the filtering system's being filtering the boat wash. And it was still, well, unfortunately we didn't test the water before and then afterwards, but the after part, it still failed at copper and zinc. So we talked to Jack to see if we needed to improve it. Well, we had to maybe increase our filters, make sure we get underneath the benchmarks so that water can be released back into the water, back into the state waters. And we did the first test of the year, and the stormwater prevention plan, we did have another failed area, which was by the Pacific Seafoods area for aluminum. But everything else was looking good. The boatyard still failed on the copper, but I think it was a copper boatyard.
Richard, I think you have a question. John does.
Okay.
All of our
tests, are they basically coming out of the culverts?
They're at the catch basin.
They're at the catch basin, the final actual point before it discharges into the water.
Okay, but I mean, we're at the lowest point. Everybody knows that. But we got culverts coming in from the highway. Has anybody ever tested at the start of the culvert right here across the street and say maybe it's contaminated before it ever gets here?
We don't. None of our industrial, this is our industrial stormwater testing that we do. And all the testing we do has no outside water influence being tested. It's all tested directly with coming from the site at the catch basin. You don't want to test the water coming from the road.
It'll be way worse.
It'll fail. Yeah. The lines that come through from up on the hill, those are our own dedicated lines that we do not test. We test all the water in a given area before it dumps into something like that. So we are just testing the groundwater from the site.
How many basins do we have?
Six test sites?
We have six test sites and we have 14 catch basins.
14 catch basins and we have six test points.
On site.
That's on site that we test that are
part
in
of
our industrial area. That's the steel wall, Hallmark, steel dock, boatyard, by the truck ramp and the gear storage before it goes out over the wall there, and then the that ditch there that goes down to the processing plant.
And if I'm not mistaken, runoff off of parking lots is exempt, right?
Correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But we still have to maintain those catch basins. We still have to clean them out.
I understand all that.
Okay.
Yeah, because if there's any oil or grease that comes from those and they hit the water, no matter if it's in an industrial zone, if it comes from the road, no matter where it comes, once it hits the water, we are, responsible for it. So that's the unfortunate part. But.
Okay. Last informational item we have is wastewater treatment plant.
Okay, well, I had it put on the agenda, and the reason I added it to the agenda as an information item concerning the wastewater treatment plant today at the commissioner's meeting. In our December 21st commissioner meeting, I presented in writing to management questions that I don't think have been answered to my satisfaction. I believe we as a board need further discussion about the wastewater treatment plant to nail down the estimated costs and required permitting from DEQ and from the county and other agencies that we have going on. And I would just like to request that maybe the management could invite the following agencies to come to one of these meetings with the wastewater treatment plant when we have it to answer some questions or give us any of their concerns that they have out there. So I would like for the City of Brookings Management and Brookings Sewer Plant Operations Representative, Harbor Water Manager, and maybe a board member attend, and Harbor Sanitary Manager and a board member also to attend. So we can get all these agencies together so that we can find out where exactly we all stand together on this wastewater treatment plant.
Thank you.
All I have to say for my information. Thank you.
Is that the direction the board wants?
I have a comment. I was going to be making a motion to basically remove the module that is used in the processing of human waste from the wastewater treatment plant and proceed only with fish waste product. And I agree with Sharon that we should have the meetings with Harbor San, Harbor Water, and Brookings, because without their cooperation, we cannot proceed with building the plant.
Okay, so that sounds to me like a special meeting at some point.
Well, when you have everything together from Jack and information for more for that, I know you guys are working toward it. But then I really like the other people to be available here to hear what Jack has to say as well.
Okay. Well, to be clear,
I don't believe that the City of Brookings or any of those other entities have a yes or no vote on this. That's up to us, but...
I didn't hear what you were saying.
I said, I don't believe any of those other entities have approval authority over what we're going to do with the port, but this is, sounds to me like it's in the interest of transparency and cooperation, so I guess we would be considering this an informational meeting and taking input they might give us.
Exactly.
On that.
But so. I have to disagree, Richard, with that they don't have, they may not have approval, but they can stop this program in that harbor water has to supply. We've been told we don't need a drop of their water. Well, Pak Choice uses as much as 50% of their water that they produce in the summertime. If we do not have an agreement with Harbor Water, there's no point in having a plant. And when it comes to Harbor Sand, are we going to buy out all the transmission lines they have? Are we going to build new pipelines and, you know, pumps? And as far as with them, the fish waste will go into their system to be shipped to, okay, where's the water going?
So the way this, I don't want to argue, but I mean, the way I see this, the wastewater treatment plant is intended to discharge back into the ocean, not into the sewer system, and that's why we're treating it.
Okay.
If we could just put it in the sewer system, we'd be golden. We wouldn't have to worry about it.
Well, then we can only be dealing with fish waste. We cannot be dealing with human waste without a permit from DEQ and have the licensed operators that they require.
Right. We're going to have a DEQ permit, period. I mean, that's the driver for this whole thing.
And that will take a bare minimum 6 months to get before you can even break ground.
Well I don't know that, but I don't know what the...
But anyway, we need a discussion on it.
What the reality is.
The plant we've ordered is... It comes in modules, and we have not ordered a module that will treat human waste, have we?
The treatment is
as
the same,
it comes to us.
The treatment's the same no matter what it is.
But it is a good idea with what you're saying, that moving forward with what we're doing right now is to dedicate it as fish, you know, an effluent treatment, you know, fish treatment. It's all that what we said with this treatment plant is that it does have the capacity to do it. Do we want to? No. That's not the direction we're doing. But we are buying a system that does have the ability to do it if and when it ever comes up and that's the decision we want.
So it's no longer a modular system with a module that does the human waste. It's now...
It's the same system. The system is no different if you were treating fish versus human waste. It's the same system.
Okay. That's not what was presented prior.
The workshop can clarify at all.
Yeah, just to put a fine point on it, it's not the intent of this commission, never has been, to treat human waste. We're trying to preserve the opportunity to have a fish processing plant in this community at all. And we're trying to look to the future to maybe attract other fish processors who may want to process, I don't know if you process squid, I guess you do, but whatever else may come along that is a viable market that we can provide for the commercial fishermen by having a processor here, that's what we're trying to do. That's the whole point of this is to try and insulate the fishing community from all this other stuff, like DEQ permits. Because we're having a terrible time with that. That's the issue. But.
Just real quick, Richard, I hear you say this all the time, that you think the port's like a little bold, and you have full control. But every one of you commissioners, you swore an oath to work with the community around your port. It's there in black and white. And we're the community. And we do have a say whether we want that plant here or not. I mean, it's working together. That's all it is.
Well, I don't, I mean, I,
I'll certainly take a little offense at the fact that we're some sort of a supernumerary here that's making all the decisions. We've had public meeting after public meeting after public meeting on this stuff. Very little input. My objective, when I got on this a long time ago, was to maintain this port as an active fishing port. Because I watched what happened in California. I'm not from there, but I used Santa Cruz for a long time. And if I'm going to end up with a yacht harbor, I'm not interested in being here. I'll be real honest with you. That's not at all what I want. So our objective that we discussed in detail about this treatment plant was what I just mentioned. What can we do to try and maintain the opportunity for this community to have a long-term viable commercial fishing operation here? And if it includes a processing plant, which we're fortunate to have, we're going to have to do something about the discharge. That's pure and simple. So, you know, we've gone out and pursued the funding. The big question was, how are we going to pay for it? We had a conversation with Congressman DeFazio about this, who's on the Infrastructure Committee in the House, and he agreed to try and find funding, and he got us funding. And he not only got us funding, but he's going to get us the funding to help us deal with the costs that have gone up since we got the original appropriation. So this is all moving forward. The hook for the port is we got to pay the match. This isn't all free. So the port made a decision. If we're going to spend our assets, the community's assets, your assets, what's our best course of action here? So when I started this, I don't know how many years ago, but we sat down and we looked about what are we going to do for this port? I mean, how are we going to go forward? We have a couple of choices. We can just raise rates until they're impossible. And we'll not, frankly, we can't charge you enough money to pay for the port. If commercial fleet, recreational fleet, we can't make any money off of that, and not enough to cover a lot of the stuff. So then we looked at the available property we have. This port is fortunate in that it has a big footprint, and we've got an RV park. We've got an oceanfront RV park. So our decision was to look at the property we have and develop it to its maximum economic potential as a return for the community and for the port. And so that's kind of the direction we've been heading. So that's why we're looking at things like having a great big pile of dredge spoils over there. If we want to dredge this port and try and maintain the depth inside where the commercial dredge can't get, we got to put the spoil someplace. So the engineer came up with a plan, says, all right, we'll make you a place. These guys have been in discussions with some of the local sand gravel people, and they seem willing to take it. So we can not only dredge it, we can get rid of it. When we looked at that kite field, I'll be real honest with you, the kite field is popular in town. Everybody loves it. From my perspective, it's a glorified dog park. And on years in which we have a kite festival, this port makes, what, $2,500?
Yeah, thereabouts.
So we take that same piece of ground, and we put 20 RV sites on it. Now we change the income to the port from $2,500 to $200,000 a year. And that helps pay for everything else. So, you know, these decisions that we're making are not, they're not frivolous and they're not punitive. We're just trying to figure out how in the hell can we go forward the long term and keep this what it is. Because I'm scared to death that our, you know, this port commission will get in a position to where we have to say, we'll sell that kite field to somebody else to build condos on it. And I don't want to do that. And I don't want to do that with any of this ground out here we got crab pots stored on. But that's the kind of alternative you get to that California's faced. Well, I mean, you've got to make hard choices.
What's changed? Because you wanted to turn half that kite park into a backup RV site.
Oh, that's nothing's changed. I want to make it a full, all the whole
thing.
You
should do that. Then you can eliminate this costly wastewater plant that you want to put in here. I mean, people come from miles around. They don't want to smell it, see it, look at it, and even know it.
Well, I guess I would just ask the commercial fisherman, how do you feel about a wastewater
treatment
plant?
That has to be here.
Well, I've already told you
how I feel about it.
It's an interesting thing that the Port of Charleston has the exact same problem. The Port of Charleston has the exact same problem. The International Port of Coos Bay is looking at building the exact same thing we're building for their processors that are there because they are currently failing the exact same water quality test that this plant is.
They process
different. So we did the water quality standards don't meet and they are failing.
They don't.
So the offside of that is, and we've, you know, like I said, we talked to Pack Choice, we talked to their people. If we don't get something here that's viable, Pack Choice does not need two processing plants within 90 miles of each other.
Sure.
They don't need it. They're not going to invest the $3.5 to $4 million in two places 90 miles away from each other. Why the Port of Charleston is looking at putting in their own to be able to keep and sustain the processing plants that they have. We're looking at the same thing. If Pacific Seafood and that plant goes away, I think we all know there'll be other impacts that come with them leaving. We have jobs that are over there that are being sustained right now. They are one of our biggest leasing companies here, and they give multiple commercial fishing boats, especially during shrimp season, a place to come and unload. So the facts are that if we can't help them treat their water, they will go away. DEQ is the only reason they're able to run right now is because DEQ knows that we are waiting on funding and this opportunity while we go forward. If it fails, they will close. That's the push and give of it. I mean, if the water quality standards aren't met, just like our stormwater, DEQ will close it or fine you to the point where you can't operate.
And your commercial fleet is gone.
Commercial fleet
and your dredging is
gone.
Okay.
When your dredging is gone,
so
you have gold pieces, of course.
Yep.
No, let's, we're gonna, sounds like we're gonna pursue coming back and talking with the larger group about this. So with that, I think we can conclude our business and we will adjourn the meeting.
Will the next meeting be a special meeting?
Goodbye.
Nice to be seen.
Goodbye.